April 8th? Yeah, May 13th. The wrong pages are coming.
And we'll start with a roll call. Commissioner Lanigan.
Michael Lanigan.
Harry Kaiser.
Mike Mullins.
Dave Jensen.
Is Commissioner Walter going to phone in or is he out today?
He is out.
Okay, thank you. Okay, can we have a motion regarding the minutes of the regular meeting of March 11th?
I'll make a motion to dispense with the reading of the minutes from our March 11th meeting.
April.
I mean, excuse me, April.
No, it says March 11th in
no,
here.
No, but
still?
It's April.
Is that a mistake?
No.
No,
did
there
we not?
Are three. There are the minutes from March, and the briefing meeting, and then the briefing meeting in March, right. And then there's April minutes.
Okay, so it is correct. So
yes.
March.
There's a lot of rules to the room.
Okay.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
What are we approving? I'm sorry.
We're approving the regular meeting minutes for the March 11th regular meeting.
Okay, yeah, there were corrections made, I believe. There.
Yes.
Yeah, I did read those, yes. I.
That's why the delay, because the corrections weren't available for me at the meeting. The March 21st briefing meeting minutes.
I'll make a motion to accept those minutes.
And I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Similarly, March 28th, is there a motion?
I'll make the motion to dispense with the reading of the March 28th meeting.
And accept them.
Accept them as printed.
Okay.
I'll second them.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
The April 8th regular meeting minutes?
I thought we did that before.
No.
You got to do it. Okay, I'll make a motion to dispense with the reading of the April 8th meeting and accept them as printed.
I second that.
Okay, any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Public comments? We have some public here today. Anybody have general comments? No. Okay.
Sure.
Yes.
I can give you guys an update.
Please do.
Before the room. So I've got some plans if you guys wanted to.
Yeah, that would be great.
So Joel Cowett, City of Sanibel.
Yeah.
So we're moving forward with the proposed riprap revetment adjacent to Sanibel Captiva Road.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
So our engineer Humiston and Moore, they
thank
have
you,
thanks. They have a preliminary concept plan. And it's going to kind of toe into the or add to the existing revetment. And there you can see the existing revetment is about 150 feet long. It's kind of the hashed mark. That's what's existing there. And then the boulder looking addition, that's what's would be added to the roadway. And that black line, we're proposing to put a kind of like a bulkhead, a wall, a capped wall there to give added protection to the road.
They're going
to
be concrete or metal?
I believe it's going to have a concrete cap on it, but I think the plan is to also to eventually bury that under, dune, and then replant.
So it won't be visible, basically.
It won't be visible, no. So we're still tracking down some of the, Sanibel City Council has been presented with this. They've accepted it and given authorization to move forward. So Humiston and Moore, having constant meetings with DEP about what's needed on our end and to move forward to get the permitting for this revetment. And we want to get it, the plan is to have this project completed by winter 19, winter 1920.
2020?
Yeah, winter 2020.
Would you just point out, let's come over,
sure.
I don't quite...
So what we're looking at here, this big area, this is actually the fill template for the permit, the CEPD's permit currently.
Mm-hmm.
And the revetment will be, the riprap revetment is right here. So this right here is what's currently existing, this little hash mark in here.
Oh, so the first eighth of an inch.
That would be the new one, no. See this little hash in here? I know it's hard to see. These little hash marks here, existing right there, yes. Mm-hmm. That's currently the riprap.
The boards that are standing up from the...
It's boulders. It's riprap.
Oh, that's boulders.
Rip-rap.
Okay.
Yep.
I see. I'm sorry. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then this would be added right here. See how there's kind of these little eighth of an inch and then extended out to the sides here? So that's what's being proposed to be added. And then this black line is I hesitate to use seawall, but, a hardened structure that would go in, sheet pile or whatever would be driven along the side of the road to give added protection. Mm-hmm. Behind that
You said bulkhead earlier.
Bulkhead,
I understand what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Is that explained here? Is that what this is over here?
This is kind of, yeah, exactly. So if you're on the back side, you know, you can see the bulkhead driven in back there. And kind of it shows different profiles. So, you know, the middle one would be the existing. So the lighter rock is what's currently existing there. And then the darker boulders would be placed on top. And, you know, the top and bottom ones, the top and bottom profiles are either side of the proposed revetment. So this would be new riprap placed north and south of what's currently existing there, kind of tapered off.
Joel, not very long ago, there was a storm of some kind, and City Councilman Maughan was there, and Judy was there, and some other people, Keith, I think, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And it looked pretty close, and I'm just curious, what is the forecast relative to how, you know, whether there's anything serious going to happen out there before you do this?
Yeah, so that during that storm, they kind of established about a 6-foot line off of the asphalt that if the erosion, so currently it's kind of holding at about 11 feet, the escarpment's about 11 feet from the edge of pavement, and they had established a 6-foot line that if need be, you know, if the erosion gets to that 6-foot line, then that'll be a trigger to dump sand.
Do an emergency
because it's above mean high water, so
yeah.
You know, we have fill that we can that's actually being dredged from another area.
And sand would do it if you put in sand temporarily.
I believe so.
Okay,
yes. That's a public works kind of call on that one, but that's kind of the plan that trigger.
Where are you going to get your sand now from?
Public Works has sand from other dredging, from canal dredging projects that are happening on the east end of the island. So they have, you know, fill that they can put in there.
One question that I was raising that day when I was out there is, in the event that we don't anticipate it or something bigger comes along and that washes out. If the road washed out, when it washed out by Tween Waters, it took 2 weeks to repair it. I imagine it wouldn't take so long this time. But have you thought about alternate paths off at all?
I do. I can go back. I haven't been privy to those conversations.
Because I walk there all the time, and I kind of scoped out that down Pine Avenue. Mm-hmm. Randy Wayne White has a lot that has a little white chain fence, and it actually connects to Sandcap Road.
Okay.
But it needs a little bit of work to get up over the lip onto the road.
Sure.
I mean, just trying to think ahead about a contingency plan. So,
I was out there a couple of days ago, and let me tell you, it is really looking bad.
Yeah, I mean, we have had some accretion. It has actually accreted in height. So the escarpment, you know, is, and we anticipate too. With the, I mean, as you guys know, the weather, you know, the cold fronts are going to, die down.
Right,
and
right.
You know, we generally in the summertime we do get accretion on the beaches, so
that should help.
Basically. So yeah, that's what we're anticipating to happen. I did, you know, drive by today, saw there was some white cap. I'm going to go check it out on the way back, but I did see that there were some good waves, but it didn't look like anything, you know, any worse than it has.
No. Wasn't as bad as that one day.
Again. So I'm looking at, so here's the edge of the pavement.
Correct.
And the proposed steel sheet pile will be about 11 feet from the pavement. And this is the existing wood bulkhead that's visible now?
I believe so, yep.
And that's about 125 feet from the pavement approximately, if that's 25 feet, 100 feet from here. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure I understand that.
Sure, yes.
And then the existing riprap is where?
So this is the kind of the middle profile right here. So that's the existing existing riprap. Yep, existing revetment.
Okay, that's what's existing.
Correct.
And
so like this would be closer to closer to Captiva. This is like middle, and this is, you know, east of this is like you're, as you they just different profiles throughout that project area.
Got it. Okay.
Mike, if you look on this line, you see where there's some lettering in the white background. It has a line that actually points to that bulkhead and rock revetment. If you look very carefully at it, it's a very light.
So yeah, line. Like so, this top one here, this is 7+00. So that first, so this one right here that you first, sorry,
okay.
This one here that you first pointed out, that's along this line right
I
here.
See. Yep. Yes, thank you.
Yep.
Now let's,
and then 10 would be here, and then 11 is right there. Yeah.
And let's assume you all of this gets done, and it's secure again, and so on and so forth. So the winter of 2019 and 2020,
sure.
et cetera. Are there plans beyond that for renourishment?
So there, it's not shown on this, but there on this plan right here. But there then is another established trigger point for, you know, if the riprap, the new riprap gets exposed, where I believe it's going to be even further, even more seaward of what we're of the revetment here. That if that starts to erode away seaward of the revetment, then that would be a trigger for an emergency nourishment project in the future. Does that make sense?
Depending on the timing, we're obviously doing a nourishment project in 2020, 2021 mm-hmm. time periods. I'm just saying is if it's not an emergency need, if there's some kind of a less
we want to get we're going to do the part component of this. So you know, it's not the putting the sand on the beach is not an issue. We have the permitting in place to do that.
But
our engineer feels that, you know, putting sand on there, especially if we had done it a month or two ago,
it would be gone.
You know,
it'd
be gone. We want to get this project done, and one of the putting sand on the beach, we can't do it within, I believe, 8 or 9 months of your project. So as long as that's 8 or 9 months prior to the. The CEPD's project, then we can get it done. That's why.
What is the 8 or 9 month constraint about? I'm just curious.
I don't know. I'm not sure. That's just the number. That's the number that it was conveyed to me through our Homeless and More.
So I'm simply making the point that if there was any opportunity to try to put the two together or piggyback in some way, timing would be to let us know.
It may come if things get delayed. You know, we're trying to move this forward as quickly as possible.
Sure, sure.
You know, we could do it today. We'd do it today.
But I mean, past this point,
sure.
the nourishment part. I'm just thinking. Anyway,
sure.
I get it. I appreciate what you guys are doing.
Sure.
I'll sleep better at night.
And by the 20 part of winter 1920,
mm-hmm.
March, whatever that is, let's say February. Will what the sand? Where will the sand be on this dry?
So there, you know, this will be recovered in sand. The revetment itself, because that's currently how it was, mm-hmm. you know, prior. Mm-hmm.
Is there a drawing of the sand or not?
Actually, I do. I didn't have enough copies.
I see the existing wood bulkhead doesn't appear to be covered by anything, so I'm wondering. Are you planning on putting sand over that?
Joel, if you have a copy you want to leave for us.
Yeah, I did. I tried to print 6 copies, I only printed one by accident. So you see this green line? I apologize for not having enough copies. That would be our emergency fill template, that green right there.
The inner green.
Right? Yeah, this green polygon here. Yeah.
Got it.
What about this? What's this?
No, that's the proposed beach fill template, and then this would be the edge of berm. Yeah, so I believe that this would be where the fill would go in. It would go in. Yeah,
okay.
Inside that green box, and then the red line would be our trigger point for when we need to do an emergency. Project.
Okay.
But you're going to truck this sand in there, right?
It'll be a truck haul, yes.
Yeah. Is the sand going to be pretty compatible?
I mean, it has to be. So, I believe a mine in Immokalee. I'm not sure of the name of the mine out there, but it's going to be in Immokalee.
You sent some trucks of sand in recent years, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's actually not bad sand I was looking at.
I think that one was from Ortona. That was a 600, cubic feet. Mm-hmm. That was an emergency nourishment in 14, I think, is when it was.
That's wider.
Yeah, this is going to be a much bigger. I don't have the. I don't know if we've gotten an email how many cubic feet are going to be put in there. But yeah, it's going to be a more extensive haul than the emergency project in 14, 15 that was done.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
Any other public comments?
No.
Okay. Financial report. Bob is not here, so
the report was distributed. I can tell you a little bit. There were a couple of errors that I saw, and I've talked with Hope about fixing them. On page, and it really was just things being labeled incorrectly. Page 33, there's some money that was charged in the 2013-14 renourishment expense, and that actually is the beach parking maintenance. So that will be moved. And then there's also some money in the Renourishment 2021-2022, we need to get those dates changed, that will be split with the Renourishment project and also with our engineering expense.
Anybody have any questions?
No, no.
Financials? Okay. Now, we did some work. I see it's on the new business, the draft budget, so let me skip that for now. So, Redfish Pass, sand search, and borrow area design resolution. Is this what we have, Nicole?
Yes, that is what Michelle Pfeiffer is on the phone about to tell us a little bit about.
Michelle.
I did include the proposals. They are underneath your packet of information.
Michelle, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Okay.
All right. I'll just start, I guess, with some background. So recently, we completed the Redfish Pass Inlet Management Study, as you all know. We submitted that to DEP for adoption into the state management plan. So they take the study and formulate it into a plan. That's in process now, and the next step in terms of utilizing the information that comes out of the study for CEPD is to look at Redfish Pass as basically the sand source. What the study showed is that there are areas of that ebbshoal, which is the sand deposit on the gulf side of the inlet, that can be dredged without affecting the adjacent beaches. So it looked at the entire ebbshoal and basically cut it up into smaller boxes with different quantities and different dredge depths to narrow down what would be possible sand source without having any adverse effects. So in doing that, now we know where those areas are, and we move on to this sand search. It's called the sand search in the borrow area design phase to determine if the sand is good quality, if it's beach compatible, and also the quantities that exist that are beach compatible.
Michelle, can you hold 1 second? Can we make it louder? I mean, I hear it fine. I'm worried about whether others in the back. Can you hear it back there?
Plus the AC just kicked on,
exactly.
So okay, this is a little better.
Michelle,
okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. So, do you want me to start over so everybody can hear? Or just
no, continue.
Okay. So the proposal that we submitted is for the sand search in the bar area phase. We've got several steps in the proposal in order to end up with the bar area design. So we've got tasks 1 through 6. Described in there. And we start off in task one with a desktop study. That's basically the planning phase. So we go through the records and identify the historic data sets for the study area. So what symmetry exists, what seismic information, side scan sonar, all those kinds of things. What do we know about the sediment source already? And then we develop a plan for the next two phases, which are the next two tasks, rather, which are the geophysical survey and the geotechnical survey. The geophysical survey is basically to see what is physically there. So we get bathymetry, we collect information on the subsurface geology. We also look for any potential underwater shipwrecks, cultural resources, any kind of submerged hazards, that kind of thing. So we have the next portions of the proposal describe all the equipment that's used in order to collect that data. Once we have that information, we move on to the geotechnical survey, and that's basically to characterize what is out there. So we know where it is and what it is, but we know where it is, but now we need to figure out what it is. So we use fiber cores, collect fiber cores in different areas within the sand source to determine, to characterize the fan. And a vibrocore is basically a long tube that's vibrated into the seafloor, and then you can extract out those layers of sediment in order to create a map of the sediment characteristics within the gar area. And again, in the proposal, it describes all the equipment that will be used to do that data collection. And once we collect all those cores at the right spacing, we bring them back to the lab here at our office, and we split those cores, and we log them, basically look at them at different intervals and extract different pieces of the fiber cores, run them through a sieve to determine the sand size, the shell content, the color, all those different kinds of things. Again, to see where the material is beach compatible, where it's not, if there's rock, all those kinds of things. And while we're collecting this data, we're also completing the cultural resource survey, which is in task four. So basically, this is required by SHPO and DEP. To clear the bar area of any significant archaeological artifacts. So the most, I guess the easiest way to describe it is if there was a shipwreck or something like that out there that would have cultural significance, that needs to be identified, located, and then it would have to be avoided.
Michelle, I have a question on the fiber cores. You have 16 fiber cores that you're getting, and it says at a spacing not to exceed 1,000 feet. Is there a minimum spacing required as well? I'm trying to think of what kind of an area that you're covering and taking the 16 fiber cores.
Yeah, the 1,000 feet is the minimum they can be apart. That's the minimum in order to, that our geologists would use to design. It's also the DEP required minimum. So, I mean, the area that we're using right now, it's basically, I don't have like a square footage or...
But you're not showing a minimum, you're showing a maximum. So I mean, you're not taking all 16 in a very small... I'm assuming you want to try to get a fair amount of coverage to determine the quality over a larger area. I had no idea, but I'm guessing.
Yeah, that's based on the bar areas that we identified in the study, basically the areas that were... that could be dredged without causing adverse impact. So it was the areas that were further offshore, the boxes that were further offshore. So we use that as a basis, assuming that when we complete the geophysical survey, that all that area will be viable. Mm-hmm. And then we would do the geotech. It with laying that out at 1,000-foot spacing, we came up with 16 fiber cores. Mm-hmm.
I've been jumping ahead to the course page, and I have a question. The course only involved for us to use a new borrow site. Do we have to use the borrow site? Can't we just use our own?
Well, we're trying to identify whether this can be a new borrow site for the future.
Did you look at the course?
Well, let me ask a question about the cost for a moment, but have we not made a request to the TDC to cover the cost of this?
We've been approved.
Yeah.
And it's been approved, you're saying, yeah.
So it's gone through the system as far as it has so far, and then once it gets...
Right, but the expectation is that this is being covered...
Right, by the DEP and
by the DEP and the TDC, right? So essentially there would be no direct cost to Captiva.
Correct.
But there is this potential benefit, if this all works out well, that the quality of the sand is what we're expecting, and the closeness, the proximity, is going to help us in emergency situations and so on. Does that all sound correct to you, Michelle?
Yes, it does.
Yeah. And the idea is that this would not be done at sufficient time for this current nourishment, so we're looking at using this for emergency stopgaps in the future. Is that a correct assumption?
Yeah, that's correct. And so that would be basically the next step, is after the sand search and bar area design is done, you can move forward with requesting a permit modification to your existing permit and get this source added so that you could use it as you described.
Okay. Continue with your earlier comments. Sorry.
Okay, no problem. So I was just finishing up with the cultural resource survey. Again, that's a requirement, and we're prepared to do that as part of this sand search.
Yeah.
That investigation, of course, will be provided to CDP, and so we'll handle the agency coordination on that end as well. So once we've completed all the field work, collected all the data, analyzed it back here, our geologists and engineers will work together. They'll pass over the information to the engineers in order to prepare the barrier design. Prepare something called a sediment quality assurance and quality control plan, and that basically matches the barrier sand to the existing beach sand. It's the same kind of process that's done for your offshore sand source. So you'll basically have another sediment to HSC plan set up for redfish packs. Then we also complete the compatibility analysis again to make sure that the sand is beach compatible. And what the geologists will have identified in with the data is a sediment thickness map, which then we'll use to, we'll take the sediment thickness and anything that needs to be avoided, such as a cultural resource or a hazard, something like that, or any poor sediment quality, and remove that from the bar area design. And then we'll finalize it considering what's actually capable to be dredged. So, we need to isolate the areas that have that are thick enough for a dredge to actually come in and remove. So if it's a very, very shallow, very, very thin layer, the dredges have difficulty in removing that. So we try to get a good amount of thickness and then also something that's wide enough for the dredge to come in and move the cutter head back and forth and excavate the material. So we take in those things to account so that when you get to the bidding process, you have something that that the dredgers can provide a decent bid on. And then the final task is just the report development. So all of this information that's gathered is compiled into a geotechnical report. All the bathymetric data, all the sediment thickness maps, all the seismic profiles that have the any hard layers, all the sediment layers on there, all the vibrocore logs. Everything's compiled into the geotechnical report, which will be provided to you. Along with the final design.
Michelle, I know sometimes in the past we've had residents who maybe come from New Jersey and places where the sand source is closer and they don't have to move it as big a distance and so on, and taking it out of areas like a pass, et cetera. A particular type of dredge tends to be used. Is that the cutter head dredge that you would use in an inlet like that, or I'm just... Maybe I'm remembering.
Yeah, a cutter head would be more appropriate for something that close to shore.
Okay. And one of the advantages of being able to do this is that economically you don't have to move it as big a distance, and it's much more accessible and therefore would cost a lot less in the event of using that.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, you still have to obviously mobilize the dredge to the area, but in terms of transporting it back and forth from an offshore source that's miles away, or having to lay pipeline to a source that's a good distance away, several thousand feet or miles away. But your actual sand source is literally right there. So it's very, very close. It should minimize the cost.
Okay, I'd like to invite the commissioners first if they have any specific questions that they'd like to ask Michelle.
I got, hi Michelle, Dave Jensen. Page 10, the first paragraph, in the case that a vibrocore does not have 80% retention, blah, 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 what's the bottom line on that risk for us?
Okay, so The 80% retention. Yeah, we basically, if there's a situation where we don't get the 80% retention, which is what DEP usually requires in order to use it as a data point, we try, I believe, two more times to collect it, you know, in an area very, very close by, or maybe relocate to an area where we think, based on the geophysical survey, might be a better area. Then we'll hopefully then get that 80% required. If it's material that, I believe if it's material, like sandy material, it shouldn't, we shouldn't have that issue. It's not so much as a risk for this type of source. And again, we have the geophysical information ahead of time, so we can revisit that data and come up with a new plan kind of in the field as to where we want to collect a better core. But in the event that we're having issues, significant issues in with the retention, and we're following the standard methods, we would get in touch with the CPD and let them know we're having this problem and come up with a plan on how to proceed.
I don't quite understand what 80% retention means, but I'm assuming it means that you take a core and you're not able to bring out sufficient quantity in the core to be useful. Is that what that means?
Yeah, that's right. It's basically like the bottom portion of the core just would fall out.
So you don't have a useful core. Do you wind up then taking sufficient other cores to be able to make sure that you have an adequate number to get the desired result?
Right, like we would, if that area, if we're having an issue in that area, like I was saying, we could move a certain distance away where we might get a better retention and try to achieve that. We have had cores where we've gotten less than 80% retention and been able to use them in the design. So, and it really just depends on how deep. How deep the sediment layers are in that area, and if there's viable material above there, and we have enough buffer between basically where the viable material stops and the bottom of the core to provide the reassurance to DEP that the sediment quality is good, then it may be acceptable as well.
Would you typically know when the core comes up whether you've got 80% retention or not?
Yes.
Yeah, I would think, okay. So you potentially could, if you don't have sufficient number of cores with 80% or more, you could probably go right back in and get more in a slightly different area?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I believe so. I'd like to double check with the guys in the field, though,
sure.
to make sure, and I could follow up with you on that, but I believe so.
So the bottom line, our risk of us having to not get information we desire or costing more is minimal, or how do you, so our bottom line risk is we could be testing an area and because of what you've described, it wouldn't be permittable, or is that what the deal is?
Yeah, I think there's always that risk, and again, this is kind of the standard language that we include in our proposals. I don't really see that being a risk for this particular sand source because of what it is. It's nebshal. It's we expect that it's beach quality sand because of the coastal processes that happen. So I would like to provide the reassurance that we think that this is going to be a successful investigation, but you know, it's at the same time, we have to include some language that explains that with any type of sand search, it's unknown, you know, what's out there until we get out there, and the risk exists. But I do believe that it's minimal for this particular source.
Thank you.
Anybody else have a question?
Yeah.
Commissioner Lanigan.
Yeah, hi, Michelle. This is Michael Lanigan. I have a question. On the back of the packet, there's a map. Is the oval with star, is that the borrow area you're speaking of, I suppose?
That's right.
I'm sorry, on the back of the package, there's a figure?
It's outlining Redfish Pass, essentially.
Right.
where is this borrow area on this map that you're referring to?
Okay, let me see if I can see the map that you're looking at.
It's simply circling the Redfish Pass area.
Right.
Michelle, it's the last page of the information that was mailed to me on February 8th, the proposal for Redfish Pass sand search and borrow area design.
Okay, just a second. Let me pull that up. I don't have that printed right in front of me.
But I don't think we have it, do we?
You have it.
Yeah, no, but there's another document. This is just a very general area that it's identifying for Redfish Pass. Mm-hmm. There was another document which, for at more granularity, that broke it down into the areas inside the pass that would be useful. Now, do you remember that, Michelle, that you'd given in the past?
Yeah, maybe at another meeting.
Yeah, we don't have that with us today, but that shows more specifically within Redfish Pass which areas we're looking to create a borrow area. I mean, right now it is not a borrow area. We're looking to make it a borrow area, and they're looking to validate that the quality of the sand and all the other issues that they've talked about make it a viable borrow area for the future for an emergency.
Okay, I understand that. Yeah. But my question is, where is this borrow area? We're concerned about minimizing our risk of starting to dig and then find out that it's not appropriate and that sort of thing. I guess I'm kind of curious how you identified this area in the first place.
There was a separate study that you may not have been on board when it was done that shows that information. So what did you call your previous study that you went in? And
it's the inlet management study.
Okay. For Redfish Pass. Okay.
And that study identified this area as being a potential good borrow area for sand for our beaches, correct?
It identified within this circular area which areas might be useful to us, yes. How much was there? I mean, you were after several factors. It's convenient, it's close.
Yeah.
How much is there? And then is it compatible, and is it of the quality, and are we able to access it, and so on and so forth?
How much volume could we potentially bring up from this borrow area?
Did you hear that, Michelle?
I believe in the study there is a range of anywhere from 300,000 cubic yards to about 1 million cubic yards. And the study goes into information like how often you could tap into that source and what the implications would be, basically how often, how quickly it might refill based on either the area that you take the material from or the quantity. If you take more out, it's going to take longer for it to refill, but depending on what the CEPD what the needs are at the time and the quantities that might be needed on the beach for an emergency fill or whatever it may be, then that's discussed in the study as well.
Okay, thank you.
Based on the results of the prior study, what was the conclusion of the DEP? Obviously, there's a conclusion that we could go forward and get further information. Was there anything else that they indicated at that time?
DEP was a part of the technical advisory committee.
Right.
We had several meetings throughout the study, so I think having them involved throughout the study is good reassurance, and also we got great feedback from them on questions they might have for this type of study, so that when we submit the final one, we would anticipate that that their questions might be minimal. So I think that their involvement throughout the study, like I said, is positive, and at this point they would take the study and write it into a plan, which is a much more condensed version of what the study is, and it basically describes how the inlet would be managed. So, it needs to be, it could be dredged every so often with this quantity of material and things like that, based on what's laid out in the study.
And do we have any, primary or exclusive access to the sand, or can anybody else come in and take the sand?
That's an important question. The borrow areas that we have that are much further offshore that we discovered and went through similar processes and so on, we do not have exclusive access to. Will we have exclusive access to this once it's eventually permitted?
Anybody that would want to use it would need a permit.
Yes.
So I don't think that in the sense that you have exclusive access, that you would be the only entity that would be allowed to permit it. No, but they would certainly need to go through the permitting process in order to access it.
Yeah, I mean, one obvious competing area would be North Captiva that's had serious erosion. If they decided that based upon the results of our study they wanted to do a nourishment project, they would have to get a permit from the DEP, etc. Is there a risk to us that having done this work and scoped it out and so on, that we would wind up by not using it right away, by trying to keep it on an emergency basis, have risk of losing it or losing some of it?
You know, that I don't know from a standpoint of the interest, the local interest there.
Yeah.
I will say that there, in the study, there's a certain amount of material that, based on what's called the sediment budget, so basically the impact to the adjacent beaches, that it describes the quantity of material or the percentage that should be distributed to either side of the inlet based on the impacts of the inlet. And in that sense, the impacts to Captiva Island are far greater than they are to North Captiva. So in order to get a permit to utilize the material, you also have to demonstrate that you would be not in compliance, but in line with the available studies and the available documentation, the available sediment budget.
But isn't this whole borrow area based on the assumption that it's not going to negatively impact either Captiva or North Captiva?
Yeah, right. So the borrow area, so utilizing the material, yeah, that's correct, is not expected to have any adverse impacts on the adjacent beaches, but I guess I could use a different word than impact. In terms of the inlet, is trapping sand from the adjacent beaches. So in that sense, Captiva has more of a deficit caused by the inlet than North Captiva does.
I think, I mean, I want to come back to this, but any other questions?
Well, the only question I have, when will this all be finished so that we could use this sand? What would be your early? It's certainly not going to be ready for our next beach nourishment project. How many years
out? Yeah, our tentative schedule, looking at this summer, we have some availability to complete the field work, which would be the first part that would need to be done. And then after that, like I mentioned, the work here in the office to split the cores and sample the sand and produce the report and the bar area design. But as far as getting started, we have openings in June, we have an opening in July and also August. So either one of those months we can complete the field work. We have to coordinate with the subcontractors to make sure they're available, of course, as well. And I think that in terms of moving forward with the next step and maybe seeking a permit modification, and again, this effort could be a parallel effort, a parallel track to what you all have going on right now with the other nourishment project. The permitting effort might be able to get started maybe in the fall.
To get started, but as far as getting completed?
I'm sorry?
You said to get started, but I think the question is when would it be completed so that we could actually use it?
The actual permit be completed?
Yeah, when would we actually be able to go in and borrow sand from this area? That's the question I think.
Yeah, that's what I asked.
Yeah, if you don't mind, if I could
you could get back to us on
I guess think about a more long-term schedule, yeah. Then I can let you all know, provide a better answer.
That's fine. I mean, in the same context of asking that, there's been as we've looked at the apportionment process here on Captiva, there's been a lot of concern and interest and noise, et cetera, if you will, about the methods that we're using, because the number is so much higher at $30 million, which was down from the original $36 million, but still is quite high as compared to the last project. So one of the questions that has come up is whether or not using some of this might help us defray some of the cost to bring the overall cost of the project into a more manageable range.
Okay.
Tom, I don't know if you were in the conversations with Damon and Tom, but I know there were some conversations to this extent before, and it's become a little bit more
pressing
now that we've had a variety of issues with the apportionment model that we're still working out. We have not yet accepted the apportionment model because of some of the concerns that have been raised. So while you're looking at when this might be available, I think we might have a conversation with, you know, you and Tom and some of the commissioners at a, or and Carolyn and Joe at a briefing meeting or something over the next few weeks or a month as to whether there's other implications of its use in the shorter term for the next project. And I know that that was not the intention in the first place, but that's one of the questions that people have raised.
I can look at the schedule.
Sure.
To complete this work and go through the permitting process and see where that lands and in terms of when the upcoming nourishment is.
Yeah, and I, go ahead.
And developing the plans and specs for that, so I can see how all that aligns and then
sure.
And then we can follow up.
Yeah, and on a cost-benefit analysis basis, we would be asking the question, if we're already mobilizing and doing other things to borrow from the primary borrow area much further out, is there sufficient advantage or sufficient benefit to be gained by trying to take some of the sand from this area if we still have to go outside? In other words, if the amount of sand that we could harvest is less than what's needed for the total project, is it a viable option to be able to do both the cutter, you know, head dredge here and the other approach further out? And again, I'm not at all knowledgeable in the right way to do this, but that's a question that would come up. Does it make a lot of sense given that we're already mobilizing for a different project?
Right. Okay.
Okay?
I just one more question.
Commissioner Jensen's got a question.
Michelle, do you know or will you find out as a result of this study how long it takes to rebuild? If let's say we take out what we can take out, 300,000 to a million yards, how long will it take to bring that for to come back or fill up?
Yeah, that's something that I can look back into the study and let you know. But the different, basically different portions of the shoal, it depends where you want to dredge from, and how quickly they refill. But in a basic description, the areas that were considered safe to dredge from are those that are situated further offshore, which makes sense because they're deeper and they're further away, and they would have less impact on the waves that are reaching the island. So. Because they're in deeper water, they're also further away from the sand that is moving around and being deposited in the shoal. So removing that material might take longer to refill than sand that's dredged from closer to shore, but there's risk associated with dredging material closer to shore. I believe that taking the 300,000 cubic yard quantity was something that would refill on the order of, I believe it was a decade, and then basically taking a million cubic yards, it would be three times the quantity, it would be about three times the duration. So in that sense, accessing or dredging a million cubic yards might be considered something like a one-time use, because the infilling rate is on the order of 30 years, whereas taking a small amount like a 300,000 cubic yard amount to do an emergency type project would be something you could do more often because it would read so quicker.
Thank you.
Leaving the cost-benefit analysis aside, it sounds like, and I think we pretty much concluded this in conversations with you and Tom in the past, that if we were to use this as a source for the next project or for a project, it would pretty much preclude it being available as an emergency source. And it sounds like that's what you're confirming in terms of the refill time period. Does that sound right?
Yeah, if I'm understanding, you're saying if you take the full million cubic yards...
Or even if we take the full 300,000 cubic yards, let's say, right, and do it as part of a project, that means that you're saying there's still sufficient extra sand left beyond that to complete the million that would still allow us to have emergency access? Is that what you're saying?
I'm sorry, I thought okay. You said if you take the full 300,000?
If we took 300,000, it sounded like you're saying there's still sufficient sand left that we would still have an emergency source there.
Yeah, so you could do maybe a couple smaller ones. That's on the order of 300,000.
Yeah, let me withdraw the question. I think I'm understanding it, and I want to digest it some more. But any other questions of Michelle?
There's one thing I'd like to ask. With the borrow site now is about 8 miles out. If we don't use all the sand, when does our permit run out for that borrow site? That doesn't go on forever.
Well, that's beyond what we're talking about, isn't it? Isn't this?
Well, yeah, but it means how much we use or don't use from a new source.
It was I don't remember the exact date, Michelle, but
yeah,
it was a pretty long period.
The permit that you currently hold, I believe, expires. It's a 15-year permit, and I believe it was obtained in 2013. It'd be around 2028.
Yeah, I think the dates that I've seen on things is 2029.
2029, okay.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other? I'd want to get back to that question another time because it's an important question. Okay, what's next here, Carolyn? We have a resolution.
We do have a resolution. If you're comfortable with what you've learned today and you want to move forward with this process, then we need to read the resolution into the record and have a vote on it.
Okay. Before we do that, the question about whether or not this is funded by the TDC is relevant to
Absolutely.
Whether we want to decide Yes. to move forward or not now.
Right. So the records that I was able to pull from the DEP and from the TDC, both of them have it in their projected budgets for 1920.
Okay.
So, of course, we can't guarantee that because they haven't approved their budgets, just like we haven't approved our 1920 budget.
Okay.
I can say, however, that it's in line, and as long as the powers to be above them approve what has been suggested to them, then it will be covered.
Okay, now, the budget that would fund this in the event we were not being reimbursed by the TDC, isn't it the capital budget and not the ad valorem budget?
That is correct.
Okay. So would we have to put a contingency amount in this? For example, if we approve this right now, but yet we don't know that we have 100% approval of TDC, although it sounds like you're saying you're pretty secure that it's there, mm-hmm. right? But we would then in September, when we approve the capital budget, we'll know by then, or will we put money in there to cover this?
Well,
I think we'd need to put money in there to cover it just because I don't. Does the county, Haas, do you know, does the county approve their budget prior to us approving ours?
That's a great question for Steve.
It's all right around the same
county
time.
County budget's effective October 1st.
Right, as is ours.
Right.
And I don't know what the TDC agreements say in terms of expenditures prior to that effective. Because you'll enter into an agreement with them.
Okay. So we can update the resolution to say contingent on funding.
That's really where I was going is, do we need to do that?
That would probably be a good idea.
Well, you know, we don't have to.
No, we don't have to, but
we have the money for it.
If we don't, we would have to use other reserves, like from parking and so on, so or put some money into the capital budget that has to be approved. So, I think putting in contingent is fine. Under section one, it says the district approves the expenditure of $349,000. You could say contingently or contingent upon approval by the various regulatory bodies. I guess you identify the TDC and the DEP. Are those the two bodies you're talking about?
Yes, that's correct.
All right, so the district contingent upon approval by the TDC and the DEP, the district approves the expenditure of $349,000. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Anybody have any questions
well,
on that?
What does the DEP have to do with the expenditure?
She said they're part of the funding source.
The state is looking at funding like $76,000 of it.
Okay.
And then the TDC funding the balance, $290,000,
whatever it is. We have a thought here.
My suggestion would be to make that approval over the Board of County Commissioners, because the TDC will make a recommendation to have the approval right by the Board of County Commissioners.
So contingent upon, I'm just take notes on this, but I'm just saying out loud. Contingent upon approval by the Florida DEP and Lee County BOCC, comma, the district approves the expenditure of, does that sound right?
Yes, or contingent upon approval of
funding
through
yes.
The BOCC and the Florida DEP. We just insert that phrase in there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Go ahead, Hans.
Question on schedule. If you're delaying active moving forward until October sometime for the board to approve the budget, is that delay going to be a problem for us on our schedule and then executing the work?
That's a very relevant question. Did you hear that, Michelle?
Yes, I believe.
When's your drop dead date on go ahead?
Like I said, the availability that I looked at with our field crew was just the next several months, June, July, August.
Yeah.
And we have availability right now in each of those months to do the work. So, it really depends on if the field schedule fills up. But we're flexible in terms of getting, you know, reworking things so that we can make sure we capture the or collect the data this summer. If it's going to be beyond that, then I would need to just check back with our field folks to see what our availability is for the fall, if you're looking at that time frame.
Okay.
And I'm sure we have it, but yeah. I would just want to...
No, I think, frankly, given the point... And given that we do have alternative sources of money, I would say that we should not put a contingency in there, that we should basically approve the resolution as written. So I need to hear a motion to that effect, if somebody agrees with that. A motion that we approve resolution number 2019-03, which would fund this without building in a contingency for DEP and the CDC.
Discuss now or wait for the motion?
We would wait for the motion to discuss it, so... Does somebody want to make
Sorry.
Okay. Does anybody want to make the motion to approve the resolution as written? Anybody?
No.
We can discuss it. You make the motion. We second it. It doesn't mean it passes. It gives us the opportunity to discuss it, and we can then decide to vote against it. So...
Okay, I'll make the motion now.
Okay, and I'll second it.
Okay, my discussion is it seems really clear that this, it doesn't seem like we're going to use this for our next project. It's more of an emergency thing. And, you know, I'd rather see us, in the event that we didn't get the money, I'd rather see the money go towards the project then. And then delay the emergency or the study for the future. But I would go for a contingency thing in it.
Michelle, is there a possibility of a portion of this project being authorized now, like a phase one of it, and for a portion of the cost, and we'd say go ahead and do the work over the summer so we keep the ball moving on this, and then let you know about the final aspect of it after we've gotten the budget approval in September.
Yeah, if we want to break out a portion of the tax, I will say that, let's see, like I said, there's six tasks. The one is the planning phase. 2, 3, and 4 are the field work.
Yes.
So those would all be completed essentially around the same time frame, and we could break up those as well. But I'm thinking you want all the field work completed, and then we would break the proposal before we get started on the design work. Is that what you're thinking?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that could, we could split that into, like you said, two phases there.
Do you have sufficient information to give us a modification now, or do you want to come back to us for the approval next month? And is there anything going to happen between now and next month on this? I mean, I'd like to keep the ball rolling, but that's up to you relative to whether you could break out the estimate on cost so that the resolution could be modified.
What would you need from me basically right now in order to...
Well, let's just say an estimate of money, that approximate estimate of money to take us through, you know, keep work going through the summer, and then we would know in the fall whether we've got the funds from the Board of County Commissioners and the DEP.
Okay.
Is it 100,000 of this? I mean, it's just, I'm not trying to put you against the wall. You decide whether you think you could break it out that way.
I would need some time to to break out the tasks, between those.
Okay, so let's continue with our discussion, and then we'll try to give you some instructions at the end of that. So Dave has said that he'd rather not risk having to use funds that are possibly to be used by the project in the event that we don't get the money from the county and the DEP. Anybody else have any thoughts on this?
I like the idea of trying to get a schedule, keep it rolling, and have a modest expense risk out there. If we can get that, I think that would.
Yeah, it sounds like we're not going to get that in this meeting. Unless you want to break and come back to us, or do you need a day or two to do that, Michelle?
Yeah, I think I could probably give you a draft figure, but as far as resubmitting a proposal, I would need to at least run it past Tom about the change there and what we've submitted.
Right.
What I'd like to do is, where it says the district approves the expenditure of $349,932, if you had a minimum amount that you'd need now, and then we'd get the revision in for next month, is that minimum amount $100,000? I'm not trying to put numbers in your mouth. I'm just trying to get a feel for what that first piece would be that would give you continuity through the summer.
Yeah, I think I'm trying to pull up the spreadsheets now here too.
Okay, why don't you work on that for a few minutes? Because I was going to say to the board that we've been operating for a couple of years now on this study, and we've done a fair amount of work that we've already got sunk cost on. And the idea is that this gives us an emergency source and it's beneficial. And the probability, based on having gone to the TDC and having had that approved by the BOCC before for earlier phases of the study, I think this is going to happen. And we have every indication to think it is. So I just think that we're not taking that bigger risk towards the other project by doing this. So my vote would be yes, to keep with the resolution as written to go forward. And I understand the sensitivity of where Commissioner...
I like the contingency.
Yeah, Harry likes the contingency, so you would vote that way. Dave likes the contingency.
Well, I would like to just repeat the question.
Okay.
And or another part of the question. This emergency borrow area, what are the odds that we would use that part of that for this our project.
Right. Our, I think we asked Michelle earlier, what is the soonest we could use that sanitary?
Okay.
Yeah, how long would the permitting take and all that sort of thing, and when could we actually take sand, and would it be, you know, available on our next project? And if it's not, then
yeah, that's,
we have a little time. But we don't want to stop it, right? You know,
because because what I'm hearing, if there's a chance we could use it, that 300,000 yards, hey, that could help reduce sure. our costs right. without damage in the area. And yes, we should move forward then.
Well, I asked that question before, and her answer was kind of, it's not
going to. She needs to take it under advisement.
Right.
Is that so correct, Michelle? Is that what I heard more or less from you earlier?
Well, yeah, I think you bring up a good point in terms of, having to mobilize maybe two different types of dredges, but that's one thing that I want to talk about internally here with our staff and see if we, depending on what portion, if it in fact is permitted by the time that you want to move forward with the project, that if it makes sense to make it, to take some from there and also some from offshore or not. I think that's a really valid question.
Yeah, I think I should have phrased my question differently. Rather than access to the sand, would it save us money? In my head, you got a boat out here, you just go over here, but that may not be the case. So, sorry, Michelle.
Right.
Chair, may I?
Go ahead, Carol.
So, I want to really touch on something that Steve said that is now rolling around in my head, and I want to make sure that we realize that if we start this project before fiscal year, before they approve it, even if they do approve it, we may not be able to get paid for something that we already did in this year, correct?
Is that what you said, Steve?
That was one of the issues I raised. I've actually already sent an email to Nancy asking that question.
Oh, great.
I don't have a reply yet.
That would be a concern we need
verifying
to.
Verifying that.
Right.
Michelle.
It's internal with us. I don't have the external agreements that you guys see. I don't know how those are.
Okay. I'm going to call a vote or ask who made the motion, Dave, to call a vote, and then I think we should vote against it at this point and then try to come back again next month, just because...
Well, and next month, Appian will be at our meeting, too.
Yeah. Did you hear that, Michelle? If this decision got made in June, would you still be able to mobilize your staff to be able to do the work over the summer, or would it have any sufficient negative... You would.
That would be fine as far as our staff or field availability, not a problem there. And I actually do have a figure for you if it helps in your discussion. To complete tasks 1 through 4, which brings us to the end of the field work, would be about 300,000.
Okay.
And then the design and the report development is the remaining 50.
Right, so that doesn't really help us that much. But anyway, I appreciate your time on this, and I think what we ought to do is hold it in abeyance, so I'd recommend that we call the vote. Okay, and all in favor say aye. The motion is defeated.
Right.
So, and then what we'll do is we'll do the resolution again next month with more facts and break it out appropriately. Mm-hmm. So. And it sounds to me like we'll know by then whether the TDC will allow us to get started on the process, or we have to wait till after the budget's approved in September, correct?
We should know that by then, yes.
Okay, thank you, Michelle. We'll get back to you if there's some specific things that we need from you based upon our answer from the TDC before the next meeting.
Okay, sure, yes. If you have any questions, just feel free to let me know. And as far as... takeaways for me from this, I'm planning on discussing here internally or utilizing both of the VARA sources if it's a possibility, if that might be a money-saving option, and then also the longer-term schedule in terms of if we think we can get this permitted in time for the upcoming project.
Yes, and I would ask Carolyn to send you an email in the next couple of days, just firming up the specific questions that we have outstanding that we'll need to know before next month. So.
Yes.
Okay,
thank you very much. Any further questions for Michelle? Carolyn,
right.
Did you have anything
Michelle.
Else? For her? No. Okay, thank you, Michelle.
Bye.
Right, thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Parking lot. It's more than survey, but the parking lot update, basically. Joe, are you doing this?
Yes. All right. Good afternoon. Mr. Mullins asked me to put a little presentation together. And
I'm good, Dave. I'm good.
Excuse me for talking back towards you. This is a parking lot project for the mobile bathroom trailer. And we are trying to put together to install a three-station ADA mobile trailer with power and water, add two ADA-certified handicap spaces. We had one. We just added another space last week, but we need to bring those up to code to have a hard surface underneath each handicap spot. So we're planning on those to be concrete. An outdoor shower and pavers throughout the lot, which are an option. Here's a picture of the existing lot and our temporary bathrooms. And here is a rendering of where the trailer might go. That is 20 foot long, almost 8 feet wide, maybe seven, and 10 feet tall.
8 foot wide, including the ramp area?
No, sir. Just the trailer.
So how much with the ramp area?
It looks to be about 5 feet there.
And the how many feet long did you say it was again?
20.
Again, not counting the ramp area, so you're
right,
gonna...
sir. Probably at 24, 25.
Right. Mm-hmm. Is that an air conditioner up there? Or is that air conditioning?
I think so, yes. And here's internal pictures of each. And here's a proposed site plan of the trailer and the two handicap spaces. We put one where it would be closest to the ADA bathroom, and then we have the existing one that is closest to the Mobi mat. So we thought that would be appropriate there.
So the narrow part of that design is the entrance to the parking lot, and the wide part is closer to the beach.
Yes. We're breaking the pavers into two options for the board to later decide once we get hard costs. This first option is just a partial area in the entrance area where we're having a hard time keeping things level, as well as putting pavers around the handicap areas up to the trailer and up to the Mobi mat.
And when you say keeping it level, the entrance is subject to pothole on a regular basis,
right,
especially in rainy season,
yes,
and so on. And
the pitting and all that.
And that's,
yes,
what you're looking to try to avoid.
Yes. So we did get a proposal on that first, on these two small areas of $8,000. I have not gotten money or costs on the whole lot. As soon as we get an official site plan from the engineers, we'll go ahead and get that price.
And just for those that don't remember, that this was funded already by the TDC last year, so the money is already in reserve for it and approved, right?
Were they including the pavers?
Well, I broke down some estimated costs. So without the pavers at all, we're looking at $100,000. If we did the partial pavers, we're at the low end of $108,000, and then with the full lot, I'm just throwing a number of $60,000. Don't hold me to that. But that would put the whole project at $160,000. We're asked to do time locks for the trailer, so we'd have to retrofit after we get the trailer, so the locks would be from dawn to dusk.
And the lot is only open from dawn to dusk, so the idea is that it would be an attractive nuisance if people could have access to it after dark and after it's closed. So we're concerned with that. The local sheriff was very concerned with that.
And that's where we're at so far. We have a current proposal for the engineers at $14,500. And are we asking at this moment for them to approve that?
Yes, this is actually the front sheet of your packet, I believe, or it was a handout. It didn't make it in with your information yet, but it is the revised proposal for surveying, engineering, permitting, and construction-related services.
In order for our permits, we need to have a survey that is within 6 months old, so we'll have to get that done right away.
Now, let me just take a minute to remind everybody that most of this started when the Parks and Recs Department, who basically supervised our role here and supervised the use of these parking areas and the beach parks, dinged us, I guess it was sometime probably last spring or summer, with the fact that there was landscaping problems, that it was pretty much untidy, there were a variety of other issues and whatever. They had a list of problems. Damon, I think, was here at that point in time, and he dealt with them on it. And they both kind of agreed that we needed to go forward and do some things to bring the parking lot up to a better standard. In the course of doing that, you know, Damon left, but the money had been approved by the TDC to do a variety of different things with this area. And in the course of trying to execute what seemed like a pretty simple plan to bring in a mobile trailer and put it to work, Joe and Carolyn discovered that we needed permits to get the work done, we needed a survey and engineering, etc. Some other issues we're trying to accomplish in the same, like the partial pavers, the same time period. And they also discovered there's lead times for getting the trailer and etc. Along the way, as we started to look at this, it was a little bit more complicated than we thought. I mentioned, I think, to Bob Walter that, because he had raised questions in the past about whether we could swap this lot with the Shirley lot, I mentioned something to him that he ought to get up to the office and find out some more facts about it. There is also an adjoining neighbor, Susie Henry, who owns two houses on some lots immediately adjacent to the parking area. So I called her to let her know that she'd want to wire into this to make sure what impact it was going to have, etc. Bob wanted us to sort of stop work because he feels that the potential of swapping this with the Shirley lot would be good. We have never voted on that. We don't know any of the specifics of that. We know that this particular lot is not owned outright by any one of the entities that are in the interlocal agreement. I think that we have an interlocal agreement between the county, between the CEPD, and South Seas. South Seas owns a sliver of the land. There was a party that has title to the land that donated it to be perpetually used as a turnabout or a parking area. We have some issues before we could eventually do any swap, if we were desirous of doing that, to find out that about the title and about whether we'd have any conflicts with the original donor. So there's a bunch of questions, and many of these questions were raised probably 10 years ago when South Seas thought they wanted to put a hotel where the employee housing is, and we proceeded down the path of looking into it without actually voting on whether we would do it or not, and they more or less backed off spending the money doing the title search and other things that were necessary because they weren't certain that they wanted to do it. But it has come up again, and it comes up periodically, especially in light of the fact that the resort goes on the chopping block from time to time, and they want to show full potential of what its ultimate intended use is, so the subject does come up. So while Bob felt that we should stop work pending that decision, I authorized Joe to continue to put an order in with a maximum. What is the maximum expense on the trailer? I think it was
$4,000.
Yeah, so by putting a $4,000 non-refundable deposit, we could start the building. It wouldn't be ready until September, I guess you said, or thereabouts.
So hold it till August.
August, okay. So we need to make a final decision, but we had already funded the entire building, if you will, on the entire trailer, so that had already been approved by the board. So I thought it made sense to go ahead and take a risk on the $4,000. I additionally authorized him to go forward on the permitting process. I don't know how much money was at risk there, Joe, but
I got 2,500 max, I think.
Yeah, and most of the work that needs to be done is covered by the amount of money that was approved originally. And Carolyn, you know more details about that. So the money had already been approved by the board.
But you got to approve the 14.5 in order for the permitting to start. So the total risk for that is 17,000.
It is, but I think that the board already approved an expenditure, I'm not sure how much, with the money that came from the TDC. So I guess you would have to find out, or we could call another motion at this point on it.
Right. So you previously approved, I think, was 53,000 be used for the mobile trailer itself.
Okay, so you have basically another $6,000 there that may cover the deposit and the original work, but not the 14.5 survey and engineering. So I guess you're coming here today, Joe, asking us to approve the 14.5?
That's the next step.
Okay. And any thoughts on that you wanted to add, Carolyn? Is that sufficient?
I think that's sufficient. The 14.5, you might want to add the permitting to it and go for the 17. The title search is already in process.
Yes. We should get that done by the end of this week.
I vaguely remember when we brought this up at the briefing meeting the other day, last Thursday, that you were going to ask for a $20,000
approval. I think 20 is safe.
So will that include the pavers for the beginning?
No, not at this point. That would be...
That's what we really need.
Now, the pavers, I'll let you know, we actually submitted an additional $50,000 request to the TDC for the next year for pavers.
Okay.
To pave the lot.
Well, the idea is to get the ball rolling on this because there's a long lead time to ordering the trailer, which we got the money last year for, right?
And this current year. That we're in right now.
In the current year, but I mean at the last TDC request, I guess, that we made last year. In any event, we were, as I said, criticized by the Parks and Recs Department and the condition of the lot and the bathrooms and so on, and so we were attempting to rectify that by creating a higher quality, a better user experience for the people that come to use the park. And I would suggest at this point in time that somebody make a motion to approve $20,000 to keep the ball rolling on this.
Can we make it?
We can have if we make the motion and we second it, we can have all the discussion we want.
Okay, I make the motion.
And I'll second.
Okay, so now you
have
your
I just have a question, and only because I have to ask this question. Can't we just continue to do, other than getting slapped on the wrist every now and then by Parks and Rec, can't we just keep doing what we're doing and waving $350,000 a year in parking revenue?
Say that again.
Right now we've got, you show the photo again from what we have. Yeah. Can't we just continue to do that and just wave in, the parking revenue? Is our parking revenue going to be adversely impacted if we just keep that?
Keep it the way it is versus...
Yeah. Is that an option?
It is an option. What is the objective of that? I mean, we're not going to lose much parking revenue. We might lose a couple of spots by doing this. The whole idea is, though, is to, as I said, improve the user experience up there within the daylight hours.
Can I just add?
Yeah, go ahead,
if
Carolyn.
You don't mind, Chairman. The only thing that I believe at this point we really, really need to do, Mike, in answer to your question, is we have learned from the county, from the permitting department, that our handicap areas, first, we need to have two as opposed to one. And they need to be hard.
Concrete surfaces.
Concrete. So that part, I think we're really obligated at this point to move forward with because that's an ADA requirement.
Well, they told us we're open to liability right now.
Right.
So what about when the county made the statement that, you need to improve it, are they going to prevent us from operating if we don't do that?
No.
Probably not.
Okay. Got it.
But we do have the income source here, and we are, when we originally were given the income from this parking lot, we were also given the responsibility to manage it and take care of certain things and so on. And so along the way, when they point out that, things have deteriorated, this doesn't necessarily just deal with those issues, but it's trying to make the total experience for where we're bringing in $300,000 to $400,000 a year in revenue an appropriate experience for the kind of park that's up there. And to be honest with you, I've gone to Sanibel and Turner Beach, which is on Captiva, and taken pictures of, you know, and they've got some permanent bathrooms. They've got much more established. Showers. No, but even the areas where the parking meters are, it's, I mean, basically is much more upscale in the quality
than
what we have here. They don't have, no, they are. I mean, it's not air conditioned, but. Now, I will say also that years ago, we had been given approval, I don't remember who asked for it, but for a mobile trailer, and we actually gave the money back because we had complaints from a neighbor, Jim Boyle, about having the mobile trailer there. He thought it was too high, and he could see it from his upstairs in his house or whatever the situation may be. So we actually gave them back $65,000. I think that it would not be prudent of us, if we're going to be asking them for grants periodically, to turn around and ask for it, get the money, and give it back. I mean, I think this is a beneficial experience that we can create. Go ahead.
And right now, we have got how much of committed funds from them?
Well, we had $180,000, which included partially this and some other things as well.
Well, how much just to this?
I don't remember that.
I don't roughly know exactly. I think it's about 110, isn't it?
110 to 130.
Yeah.
Just for the parking lot?
Yes.
And
project.
And then the rest was for the beach monitoring person or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
May I also say that a lot of the guidance that we get relative to how we should maintain this parking area also comes from the Lee County Sheriff's Office. For example, they advised us to close it at dusk. Prior to that, I think for some reason they had it at 11 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. And the reason was that there are people that congregate up there at night, and they want to have probable cause. If it's closed at dusk and they see people on the beach right outside it or parking there, right, they want to have an opportunity to go and talk to them. Now, what goes on up there, and I don't know how often this happens, but people have cut holes in the walls of the porta potties. And ostensibly, there's a belief that drugs are sold sometimes and that somebody's in. I haven't seen this, and I don't know what it's about, but there's been some history there that I was not a part of, but I've heard from Carolyn and Joe that there was concern from the police that they had cut a hole and passed drugs between.
And will this project allay any of that risk?
Well, it's not going to be as easy to cut a hole in the wall. You know, it's a more substantial unit.
I've actually talked to the engineer of the unit, and it would be pretty difficult to cut a hole through these walls.
Okay. Right. And are we going to have any kind of security up there?
Well, that's still a question, because at one point in the past, I wanted to put actual cameras up in the parking area and was advised by Mike Sawicki's predecessor, Joe Pappalardo, that actually would increase our liability because it creates the illusion of safety and security. I even wanted to put in fake cameras just so that people would feel, and apparently that's worse than real cameras.
Okay.
So, you know, we're learning as we go, but what's happening is that, you know, we've gone from in the last 10 years of making, you know, $50,000 to $60,000 a year to making $300,000 to $400,000 a year. And to be honest with you, the quality of the upkeep I complain about pretty regularly, that they're not trimming it enough. And there's various other things we can do. Damon was going to have a company redesign the lot. That didn't happen, but the entrance is a problem. So we're gradually trying to do things to improve it. And Joe was going to translate this into like a multi-phase effort, with the first phase brought in the new equipment, put in some partial pavers, and, you know, keep the landscaping better, et cetera.
Well, we need those pavers, though, in the beginning, because it's often when people drive their cars in there, probably need a truck. Have some of the storms we have.
I think at least on the partial is a no-brainer.
When I go to the post office, I tend to drop in and drive around and see what it's like. And to be honest with you, we're not in rainy season yet, but we're already starting to see the quality of.
Now's the time to do it.
The whole entrance stinks the way it is. It's a very narrow entrance. If anybody came flying along to come into the entrance, an accident.
But they line up.
The signage has been done on a piecemeal basis, so we had a sign here, we had a sign. There's a lack of continuity of the whole lot. So that's another thing that's on his list. That's not a major deal, but that's another thing that's on the list to take care of.
And can I just ask, are we all comfortable with the scale of that trailer in the existing area?
Well, the reason I asked him to do this presentation today is to make sure that we were comfortable with it.
Right.
I mean, we approved the money, we approved the purchase a while ago, but I wanted to make sure that everybody saw where it was going.
Yeah, I am. I've looked at it different ways.
I like it to be hidden more, though.
Yeah, this is like the smallest choice we can go with the three units.
Wow.
So landscaping is going to help hide it a little
bit.
Yeah. But it's not going to be hidden from the view of the people who come in that have to use it and the people who come to the park.
This is the smallest ADA trailer we can get.
Okay. Is when Commissioner Walters said, hold up the ship here, about the lot swap. Is that something that's not going to happen, or what do we know?
No, it might happen, but it's so premature. I mean, what we know is that he was invited to be here to hear this presentation today, so he knew what the facts were. He's not here, unfortunately. Okay. But we've gone through this exercise before, and there's so many uncertain questions about who owns the lot, whether we get permission to do it, getting them appraised and value. I mean, I've talked to a property appraiser to say, let's appraise the Shirley lot and appraise this to see what kind of a swap there is, whether it's appropriate or not. There are things that need to be done, and I don't see it happening in less than, given the amount of time it takes just to bring this in, I don't see that kind of a swap happening very quickly. Joe had the bright idea to try to get an understanding from South Seas to lease part of their Shirley lot just to give us additional parking space. I think it's a good idea. We haven't broached the subject yet. But my feeling is that as much as we've talked about this in the past, it has been slow to move forward. And we have, I think, authorized Joe to do some title searches just to find out who owns what and to get a survey done.
We're doing five title searches right now.
Yeah, and that was within my authority as chairman to tell him to go ahead and get that information, because we're working in the blind to some extent right now without knowing who really owns the property. And I would say at some point we would reach out. If we were going to do a Shirley swap, we would have to find the people who donated it to begin with, or their heirs, it's most likely their heirs, and reach out to them and see whether they would agree. And if we're not able to find them, we might need to do an eminent domain to basically take control of that to be able to pass it on to South Seas if we did a swap. So there's, to me, enough contingencies there that it's a multi-year effort. Unless somebody has another opinion. I mean, I'm not...
Wow, that's great.
I'm not opposed to doing it. I'm simply saying that it has to be done appropriately and with the right titles and so on.
You have a major access problem to the beach if you do a swap. So that really is going to be the
again, Commissioner, I haven't seen the details, but Commissioner Walter had some thoughts on that. He apparently had spoken to the Rauschenberg estate to get some permission to go through. Again, all of that I haven't been a party to. I also did reach out to Susie Henry, who is the who bought Boyle's property, and she doesn't like the idea of the swap. I didn't get into detail with her as to why. I shared that with Commissioner Walter. He doesn't know why either, but I said to her the next time she's in town to please reach out to me, and we'd both go over the areas and discuss the approaches. And she also made a request that we have an electric eye there to identify when the lot is full and put a sign down by Blind Pass to tell people that there's no more parking. That's not going to happen. We could potentially put one 100 feet or so down the road, because what happens is there's a big lineup.
Right, and they got to back up.
And they got to turn around and back out, and it inhibits the people who are renting her two little cottages there from being able to get in, or her being able to get access to her cottage. I think a way to handle that, which I wanted to bring up, is just raising the rate. That I think using it as a
we just did, though.
I know we did, but I'm saying is if we're still getting lineups of cars, and we can raise the rate to a level at which is not unconscionable, we should be getting fewer cars lining up,
right?
And still
we should
maintaining the same.
Basically, revenue. What we're talking about in the beginning of the meeting to make the
we have a motion.
Usable.
We have
a
motion.
Who made the motion? Did I?
No.
Commissioner Lanigan made the motion.
Right.
Commissioner Kaiser seconded it. Can you repeat the motion, Carol?
Sure.
Or Joe?
It was
$20,000.
The motion was to approve spending no more than $20,000 for the revised proposal for surveying, engineering, permitting, and construction-related services to move forward with the mobile.
Okay, call the vote.
Okay, I have a couple more questions.
Yeah.
What is our, based on whether it's 108 or 160, what is our potential out-of-pocket expense? Net of TDC.
I would say zero net of TDC.
Zero. We got the money.
I would say 40.
Okay.
If we do the full lot.
No, but saying net of TDC, you're assuming that we're not going to get further money from the TDC.
No, I'm assuming we're going to get $120,000 from TDC.
That's what's committed.
Yes. Yeah.
But I'm assuming we can go back and get a, you know, either
but
a mid-year
either way,
adjustment.
Right now, you say 40 is the risk, which is a good month.
Yes.
So we can cover that in a month. And then, have you heard from any other municipalities or anything, or can we find out how these things age? What's the useful life of this thing?
Of the trailer?
Yeah.
I've talked to several people about it, and of course the manufacturer doesn't want to commit to anything because it's right on the water. But everybody knows salt water is going to eat this alive. So personally for me, I'm putting it at a 5 to 7 year lifespan.
And that part of it costs like $50,000, is that right?
Yeah.
So it's okay.
Yeah, of course. 42.5 and then 2,500 to ship a year.
Once it's
I would also disagree with that, in that I think you can put some landscape barrier to protect it from the sea spray, and then I also think in a 5 to 7 year time frame, you may have to make, you know, keep it cleaned and adjusted and so on and so forth, but the whole thing is not going to be thrown out in 5 to 7 years.
Some of it is.
Okay. What's that?
I was just asking, is it metal? Because if it is metal...
Oh, well, the ramp has now, but most of the unit itself has got, I guess it's a polyurethane or plastic.
Yeah, I mean, we went through five manufacturers, and I think this is the best one.
Okay, cool. All right.
And even if it did only last 5 to 7 years, I mean, that means we're back on the door of the TDC.
Yeah, exactly.
Asking for a new mobile trailer when we've already got everything else already.
That's right.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah, exactly. Do you want to vote before you go out, Mike?
Yes.
Okay. And I vote yes.
I vote yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So the ayes have it. Let me mention while we're on this subject that Joe said that in conversation, I think, with Susie Henry or Bob Walter, I'm not sure, but there was a possibility of putting a bar or a gate on the front, which... our local sheriffs are very much in favor of basically locking cars out at dusk, but not locking them in, meaning that there's equipment that can open on the way out but not on the way in. We have not discussed that at length yet. I think that the neighbor, Susie Henry, is in favor of it because it gets a little bit more control
around
that area. I was going to
make a proposal for you, but I wanted a site plan first.
Yeah, no, and I mean, that's going to be a subsequent phase, but the whole idea is to try to create more security around it. Keep it more organized. I mean, right now, if you go the parking, what do you call those blocks? Are on one side, not the other side. The blocks are kind of messy. We've had some incidences in the past where whatever that stake is that holds it down has popped up and done some damage to the front of somebody's car. We've had to reimburse some people. It's not a major issue, but it just is not a tidy and respectable looking place, and it should be. And if you go and compare it to the Sanibel lots, which even after all this work is done, it's a far cry from the quality that we see.
Yeah.
Although Sanibel does not have concrete pads under the handicap spaces, which is interesting. So, Joel, you might want to share that with somebody in your parks department. So, any further
concrete or asphalt? So, have one or the other.
Yeah. Okay. So, any further questions on?
Well, no. Can they be the pavers?
No, sir.
No.
They wanted an even level surface.
Pavers can move, especially with stuff growing under it and so on and so forth. Honestly, we get a heck of a lot of money out of this. It creates several million dollars in reserves over the years, and I think that we have an obligation to do a good job with it. And it's not creating a palatial situation. It's creating really a manageable and safe situation for handicaps and so on. Another thing that's come up relative to this park area is that we have some picnic tables out there. We were ordering some new picnic tables.
We did not order the new picnic tables. We put that on hold.
Yeah, now let me finish the statement. But we did hear from SCCF that they don't want us leaving the tables on the beach in turtle season. So that's an issue that has to be addressed. where we are relative to, I don't know where we are relative to the erosion control line or the vegetation line, so we're going to look into some of those things. But whatever we do vis-a-vis tables and Moby Mat, we have to, again, I noticed that that Sanibel at Turner Beach keeps the Moby Mat there year-round. I think we should be able to do that. That was originally put in to service people who had handicaps, and I think that, you know, it's probably
just
a viable.
Just up to the edge of the dune, I don't see a problem with that.
I don't either, but we've got to make sure that we're, you know, that we're copacetic with the turtle rules anyway. So that's enough, but the bottom line is I think we're moving in the right direction. Joe and I met there the other day. By the way, I did check out the bear trap litter boxes on Sanibel, and they have removed the mechanisms that make it.
Well, I discussed with the manufacturer this morning, and I'll have to drill that out because those are riveted in there.
They must sell a version that doesn't have them, but yeah.
It's a newer version, and sorry.
Okay. The waste baskets are designed so that you have to be more intelligent than me to open it, because I could not, or I didn't have the strength to open it. But you got to put your hand in and squeeze it in such a way. And maybe bears can figure it out or not, I don't know, but I couldn't. So anyway, we're going to fix that, because right now they're not very serviceable by people. Because
we need a drill or a blowtorch, so I'll look into it if you want me to.
Yeah, or have our... our service, whatever. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know how much use they're getting, because when he empties it, he can tell you, but I just don't see that it's very usable the way it is right now. So go ahead and do that. All right. Website redesign update.
That's me again.
Yep.
I was waiting on photography and drone, but that's going to even be a little bit longer, so I'm not going to let that stall the project any further. I'm finishing out the scope of the website. Of course, it's growing as we're doing it, but we should be able to get that started relatively soon.
And just for commissioners who haven't been as close to what's going on there, we're going to phase it so that the first phase is pretty much what we have right now. So we're not stepping backwards.
It's turning into a five-phase project, so we're just going to do it piecemeal and let you guys see it as we go along.
Well, the most important point is the first phase keeps us at the status quo, except we can update it more readily, whereas we've had some issues with updating it. Have we passed those issues, by the way, under the current? Do you know how to update it, or do you still have to go back to the software company? Okay. So we're going to do that first, so then we'll have exactly the same as what we have now content-wise and user interface-wise. Important future phase is, which I think we want to have in by the end of the year, is that we can provide access to the apportionment model for a certain number of users. I don't know how many. We have to figure out.
1,200.
Well, you have to figure out sufficient capacity to be able to have so many people come at the same time, and I don't know what the polling is. What's that?
Have it handled.
Okay. So we're probably going to need adequate equipment and so on and so forth to do that. You have to be able to tell us what that is as part of it. So part of the website.
$25 a month, we're all set.
How much?
$25 a month.
This is exciting, the website.
And that's coming in through...
When we get it started, it'll be more exciting.
What is that coming in through, that service that you use again, the Nextcloud?
That's on top of the hosting service, but it's with a similar company that's backing it all up for us.
Okay. We'll talk about that outside of this meeting, but tentative apportionment adjustment update. Carolyn?
So all we really have to say about that is that we worked really hard, specifically Joe, to get that spreadsheet with the numbers that utilize the tentative apportionment that was submitted to us by the economists, and now we're moving forward to explore additional ideas on how to, you know, make those numbers work better for the public and, you know, different...
That's
okay, go ahead.
Well, I wanted to clarify that what I asked Joe to do, and I haven't yet used it to see if it's doing it the way I like, but what I would like to be able to do is recreate all of the formulas that are being used by the economists so that we know if we want to try some different things and tweak it, we know what we have to change Some of the data was hard-coded before. There were some fixed numbers in there. We want to have the formulas in there so that if we say we want to do this, push this button here, we know what the results can be without having to constantly get the economists on the phone. Because getting them on the phone has been inconvenient in terms of availability and the effectiveness of being able to work that way. So now you think you have recreated the model, which has all of that in it.
Yes.
Okay. So we can then, the commissioners could sit down and try some things and say, do this, do that, without, and then go back to the economist to make sure about the viability of the choices that we make.
Yes, I don't want you to feel it's just one button I got to push.
No, so I know. I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying it's easy. I'm just saying we have the capacity to do it, to change some formulas and do some things. Now, in the course of this, we had also had some recommendations from the economist as to some of the issues we're facing, and one of them had to do with the commercial share of the apportionment, and another one had to do with this golfway 40-foot wide access that's adjacent to Commissioner Kaiser's property, and another one had to do with Sunset Captiva. And let me take that one first, that what we just learned Thursday from Dr. Strong, that the economists have been talking, and they feel that it is not legal to do what they had earlier recommended as a possibility, which is that you split the apportionment 50-50 between the seven beachfront homes. Just the storm damage assessment part of the apportionment. They wanted to split it 50-50, have the seven homes pay half, and have the rest of Sunset Captiva pay the balance. They have come back, and I've asked them to document that, but they've come back and said they feel that is not legally viable. I don't really know the details of why, but they're withdrawing that recommendation. So we still have an enigma on how to handle Sunset Captiva, where they're interpreting the common element as owned by, it is owned by all members, and therefore they're trying to take the aggregate value of all of the just values of everything in Sunset Captiva that has access and apply the millage rate to all of them, and it creates a huge jump in assessment for those parties. I've suggested that maybe we just get an assessment by a property appraiser of the common element itself to deal, to figure that out, see if that helps us in putting a value on it rather than using the aggregate value of, what is it, 80 homes inside of Sunset Captiva. So that's unsettled right now. The economists thought they had an approach. The board seemed to think that might be a good approach, but right now that's not settled at all.
So what's the next step on that?
We've asked the economists to document what they're saying at this point and give us some, you know, material to think about, but we don't have a good solution there right now, and the next step might be to hire a property appraiser, but that still has to be thought through. Okay. Now, one area where we had some positive results from the economists is that in going over the data, they saw that the way that they had, based on their beach surveys, the way that they had allocated expense to the commercial properties on Captiva was that they found that two-thirds of the properties on Captiva are accommodations, commercial properties, and the other one-third are restaurants and stores and basically non domiciles, if you will, right? And that the number that they had come up with for the benefit of that property was about $1.8 million to $2 million, I think, was the number. And that it didn't include the non-domicile type of commercial properties. So they went back and redid the numbers, and they basically said, applying the same millage rate to, I'll repeat this for you, but what we learned from the economists the other day is we had asked them to look at various things, including the commercial share of the apportionment on the beach. And in doing so, they said that the surveys that they had taken only represented two-thirds of the commercial properties, but yet they were using the benefit that they came up with against all commercial properties, so that the $1.8 to $2 million that they had come up with, using the $18 million number, but of assessments that would apply to commercial properties, their survey really only counted hotels and condos and timeshares, right? So they realized that they needed to increase that to account for all commercial properties. So by applying the millage rate to the aggregate value of all the commercial properties, it would actually raise the amount that are paid by commercial properties to about $3 million.
From?
1.8 to 2, something in that range.
A million
so,
15
so, so it applies. It applies an assessment of about an additional $1 million away from residential and towards commercial. This is again. This is not a conclusion that we've drawn on it. This is simply information that they've come back with. They also came back and said that the 50-50 split on Sunset Captiva of the value is not viable. Okay, so we need a solution there still. And then the last thing is that we have this Gulfway property, which we're getting a lot of
flack on,
you know, saber rattling from members of the houses on the opposite side.
Yeah.
And I've asked for an estimate of what it would cost to put an assessment on that 40-foot strip. Mm-hmm. And for less than $1,000, we would, it's a complicated one because there's no comparables around like it. But they said they'd have to do a little bit more work. But for less than $1,000, we would get an assessment out of an independent property appraiser. And my belief is that I don't agree with the direction that we originally gave to the economists, which is to take the seven properties on the Bayside, who may also coincidentally own shares in the Gulfway. Mm-hmm. The Gulfway is owned by a not-for-profit corporation in which people own shares, and those shares can trade independently. They don't have to trade to the homes on the Bayside. So to me, I think it's illegal what we're doing, trying to take the aggregate value of seven homes that we believe are shareholders in the Gulfway, and instead to just come up with a value of what that 40-foot strip is worth as an access, and let's say it's worth $1 million, then apply the storm damage protection and recreational damage costs, etc., to that, not recreational damage, but recreational benefit, and it would turn out to be a much lower number than the one we came up with, but I also think it's a fairer number and one that the people who are in these seven homes that are complaining about the method that we've chosen, I think it's a more viable approach. Now, this is just my thought.
I came up with some old notes, 1999, I believe it was. Well, excuse me, 96. And in there, it was a letter from a lawyer, but it mentions the fact that he's going to be sending out bills to the shareholders for beach nourishment, which means to me
they were once
charged.
Yeah.
And who's the lawyer that we use now?
Nancy Stroud. She was the same lawyer.
Yeah. No, the lawyer that's mentioned here is Horn, H-O-E-N.
No, that was a person who owned a house down in that area. She may have also done some legal work for the CEPD.
Yeah.
And Sheila Hall. Yeah. But you know what? I don't think that's, in my mind, that's not the issue in question. It may be an issue in question on the part of these people who we're going to give an assessment to.
Yeah.
And we may have to deal with that legally. They've been very...
They sent us letters.
Yeah, but they've been very nonspecific. They've said anything you may have dreamed of doing, have done, or what... It was really not a very useful piece of information. It was just intended to rattle the saber or put us on notice that there's a concern. However, I think that a fair and equitable solution is what's required.
Right.
And I believe getting a private property appraisal on that land would give us more information to coming up with a fair and equitable solution. And I agree with you that they should pay something.
Yeah, just like we said, everybody on Captiva should be paying something because that's what keeps the projects going.
Yeah.
Or every property should be.
Yeah.
I had a phone call from one of those shareholders who was very reasonable in his discussion with me, and he said he had no opinion on it. He just, one of the neighbors was rattling, the cage, if you will, and sharing some information with him. He didn't mention who this person was. And he wanted to know what the facts were, and I've known this. Bill Riley is the person who I've known him for a long time. And Bill Riley asked
he's
me, and
guy.
I shared my point of view. And he basically came back and said he agrees that if there's an intensity of use involved in recreational benefits and storm damage benefits, he gets that. And he just wanted to know, should he start showing up at meetings now? Is this something that's going to be resolved in the fall? And I gave him the scope of the fact that we'll have some information by January of next year, but it ultimately will not be completely resolved, and that they shouldn't get too agitated right now because it's early on.
No, it's
we
too
haven't
early.
Even accepted. We haven't even accepted the economist's proposal right. yet. So, right.
but
there are some others
they,
who are more.
But at one time they were assessed.
Yeah.
And then for some reason or other, and possibly if my memory serves me correctly, it was because we couldn't get a proper assessment from Lee County because they don't put any.
That's right.
There's no taxes on it.
But having a private property appraiser put a value on it is a start
right.
towards being able to give an assessment. And I will say that the one individual who has made a lot of noise, mm-hmm. I've reached out to, and your name comes up
oh,
in
yeah,
much of their rumbling, but I've reached out to this one individual. I haven't heard back from Bernie Dupre,
mm-hmm.
But I think we should invite them all to come and hear what the
yeah.
story is. And but ultimately, we need to come up with a fair and equitable assessment.
So there's no estimate on
no.
On LIPA. They don't. There's a parcel of land on the beach.
I've met
no,
with the property
appraiser.
I've met with Ken Wilkinson to discuss this over years back when I was chairman
uh-huh.
previously, and I've asked him to come up with an assessment.
Right.
And he said that. You can't build a house on it. His people have not been able to get in touch with the owners of the property. They were
right.
It just wasn't worth their while
okay.
mm-hmm.
to charge property taxes on it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it would be, but nevertheless,
yeah, it's an asset.
So, but it is because you cannot build a house on it. They decided.
And the shareholders.
I don't understand why they haven't. I mean, they're at least $1 million.
Well, he's retiring. Ken Wilkinson is retiring, so maybe the next property appraiser might be well. But he was, you know, they tried and they just weren't real happy at the results they were getting, and they had more important, you know, fish to fry, so they let it go. However,
but the president, you know, remember Doris Bowen?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody thought they will agree with us that we should, and she was at one time president of the CEPD. Everybody wanted to, and she was one of these property owners. And even she thought that.
Well, we're moving forward now.
Yeah,
suffice
now
it to say,
forward.
We are moving, and we're going to get information.
Yeah,
thank
exactly.
you, Dave.
Yeah. I believe this is it is this subject. I would like to see if we can. I think we've identified what concerns there are in the community with the apportionment. You know. I'd like to see if we can communicate via email or whatever, maybe once a month, and give a status report on each of these identifiable concerns. You know, maybe we're not working on it right now. We're just letting you know.
Status report to the community or within this?
To the community.
Commission. Okay.
And the reason being is I know we've communicated that we haven't decided anything, and we're going to. We'll have an answer at the beginning of the year, but I think people get a little anxious,
uh-huh.
and they'd like to know
what
we are doing, and I just think it would be good.
Yeah, let me just say that we authorize at the, and you were at the briefing meeting the other day, we authorize the economists to spend up to $2,000 documenting the current state of affairs and their ideas and so on, but they feel like this has been so fluid, they don't want to lose track of where it's at, so they wanted to document it, and we said, fine, I haven't seen what this document is, it's in the works. But when we get that information, we might be able to draw something out of it that will allow a status report.
Oh, I feel good about where we're going, but I just want
no, but
the
I hear
community.
You. I hear you, but yeah. I'd like to see what they come up with to see whether there's Thank anything you. We can extract from that to use. However, I guess under new business, I'd like to move the advocacy letters up a bit before the budget issue and just say that mm-hmm. it's my firm belief that we need to reach out to the community and let them know that people are concerned with their share of the assessment and so on, and one way that they could help significantly is we're going to design an advocacy program where they can reach out to their representatives at various levels of government, so the county and the state and so on and so forth, that they support us in indicating that we think that these governments should pay a bigger share of the cost of this project. And given that the price has gone up significantly, given that we are paying a great deal of money, I've asked Carolyn and Joe to research how it's handled in Lee County for other beach areas in the county, because I think that we pay an inordinately bigger percentage than anybody else does. Many of the beaches in the county are nourished by the county and funded by the county with maybe some federal money at times or whatever. So they're going to get me that information. I'm trying to draft the letter that I want to send out. I'd like to have the benefit of some of that information first. So they're also supposed to be drafting some sample letters that we could send out to people and say, you know, here's some of the things that you could do.
It's attached.
Yeah, and I haven't read them, so I, to be honest with you, I can't say that that's the right approach yet. We might want to give them an online email that they can just, you've seen these things all done on the internet, how this stuff gets handled, where it's easy to send it. Or to encourage them to make phone calls. So there's a broader program, and this is just an idea I've had that I have not brought to the board here before, previously, but I'd like to hear your input on how you feel about encouraging people to advocate to their elected representatives that Captiva shouldn't be paying the kind of share or should pay a much smaller share, et cetera. Any thoughts that anybody else has on that?
Well, I think it's a good idea, but I think we got to do our homework and be clear in this letter. It's got to be, got to have the facts straight, and because we're also in a relationship with these people that we're getting the money. Whether we feel we need more, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, there's every intention to be respectful and to be information based and to make a strong economic argument.
Right.
We've gotten some data from our economists, which we may be able to use. I don't know if you've gone into that at all, Carolyn and Joe, relative to the projection, but at various times the economists have projected that our economic impact on the county might be $150 million a year or more. There's fairly substantial information that they've had in the past, so you might want to look at those surveys. I think even before you got here, Carolyn, we had our first presentation from the economists, where they had estimated how many people are using the beach at different periods mm-hmm. of time. That we found some errors in their estimates, and I had to go back and redo some of the work. But ultimately, they were able to ascertain from that how much is being spent both locally on Captiva, and then project what's being spent throughout Lee County. That information is very useful to being able to make the argument that we're contributing so much to the local governments. We already know what we're contributing by way of taxes.
Bed taxes.
We don't know bed taxes. Yeah. We have an estimate of bed taxes, but mm-hmm. the county has, I guess the clerk of courts is responsible for that information and said that there's a state law that precludes them from sharing that if a community is sufficiently small, and I don't know how that's defined. But this has been an ongoing battle I've had off and on over the years with the county manager and then the clerk of courts, and they have shared it with us in the past. But we feel that, you know, we're paying 11.5%, 5.5% goes to the county on all the accommodations on Captiva, and, mm-hmm. and it would be meaningful to be able to know how much we're contributing to their coffers.
Well, the real estate agents can help us there too.
Yeah, there's lots of ways. The problem with any of those ways is it's a guesstimate on our part. It's
right.
speculation, and it would be much better if they actually gave us the specific yeah. information so there's no speculation on it. But this is all part of the larger program to say, what is Captiva contributing to the county? What are we paying in taxes? And who should take the responsibility for this $30 million project? And what apportioning of the responsibility goes out. And part of the reason why I want to reach out to the community on that is that people communicating to their government would be very useful to them to basically bring in the cost down. They need to hear from all the people out here. Mm-hmm. And I think it'd be a much smaller number that we have to deal with, and it makes some of the arguments moot as to who pays how much or whatever if there's small differences. If there's big differences, it's a different story. Anyway, any other thoughts on advocacy?
Well, did we move off a tentative apportionment adjustment or?
Yeah, I thought we had moved to new business.
Okay.
Did you have something else?
Well, I just so we will communicate with the community and update. Yeah, okay.
Yes, we will. Yeah, we will.
Thank you.
Linda has a question.
Have we ever tried to do anything to get more people registered to vote here? Because.
Yes.
I mean, we've got this issue, and we also have a tide issue, and maybe we have more of a say if we had more voters?
Absolutely, we would have more of a say. We've actually seen the numbers decline.
Yes. Well, we actually
did ask the county, the supervisor of elections, they sent somebody out here to register, but we need to do a bigger campaign on that going forward.
But at the
end of the day, since I've been here, I've seen it range between the high 200s and 450.
Right.
It would be nice to get that up considerably, and I think that's important. And I think it's important for a lot of reasons. However, ultimately, I think Captiva has had a voice in many respects because it's such a big contributor to the county economy and to campaign coffers and whatever else it may
be.
Okay. And these are not insignificant issues, but they are important issues. So, and I have to say that many county commissioners at least will listen when people from Captiva speak and reach out to them, and that's been a pleasant experience. They don't always give us what we want, but sometimes we do get access. But I agree with you. Getting more people to vote is always a plus. And getting, by the way, in this referendum, I was a little disappointed being down there, finding out that we had less than 50% turnout. And yet, when I spoke to Tommy Doyle, he said, well, as compared to 14% countywide, we did very well. And then we had 86% in favor as compared to all the other elections. The best one was maybe in the 70%, but most of them were, you know, just barely over 50. So we did very well for that small little part that we are. So I felt a little more encouraged by that information, that we at least are turning out in numbers of those of us that are registered. But definitely we should have more registered voters.
But we used to have a lot more, and it's almost sad to see nobody wants to bring their vote over the, really, it's a primary residence. That's hitting a lot of people, and it will be. I would say we're going to get fewer as the time goes on.
I think that the good news is that, you know, we did have a nice turnout and so on. But I think the good news also is that Captivans are coming to these meetings and are concerned with their apportionment and are paying attention. And hopefully we're recruiting future potential commissioners, that people are getting involved and coming to. But I think, you know, I've not been unhappy with any of the noise. I think it's delayed some things. It's caused us to look at things differently. But the truth of the matter is, getting more visibility and awareness is a positive thing. And getting more Captivans involved in their beach nourishment is a positive thing. We seldom saw anybody turn out for our meetings other than those that had to be here. Okay, now, under new business, we have a draft budget for fiscal year 2020.
If you go to the back pages, starts at page 40, we put together a very first rough draft of the capital projects budget. What we included the Redfish Pass geotechnical that we were talking about, park maintenance, some county design works. What I did was I took some documents that I found that actually had amounts on them from the county, from the Florida DEP, and projections of what they thought would be coming through for us, and put those in there. So if you look over those numbers, you'll see I didn't increase the parking lot revenue. Just kept that the same.
I'm getting a little confused now. Let me understand something. The schedule that we have with trim and so on really relates to the general budget, correct? Not the capital budget.
Yeah. Okay. And so that is on page 42.
Okay. Let's start with that, because the reason why is that we're looking at this early. It's May, and there is a deadline to have something submitted to the property appraiser by, I think, August 4th, usually in that vicinity, the DR 420. And so because we have sometimes in the past canceled the July meeting, we're trying to consider this a bit of a workshop to estimate what some of our numbers might be so that we can approve it in the June meeting in the event that we're not going to have a July meeting. If we're going to have a July meeting, we can approve it in the July meeting. But we have to be able to give you the direction so that you can submit the forms that are due in the beginning of August before our August meeting.
Exactly, yes.
Now, having said that, the a big portion of the budget annually is for contingencies that don't always materialize, and so by our rules of procedure, we roll forward any residual that's not used during the year into the following, not the following year's reduction, but into the reserve, if I'm not mistaken, right?
That's my understanding, yes.
Yeah. So, and you might want to double check the rules of procedure on that. But basically what we've been doing is trying to accumulate a little bit of extra money on an ad valorem basis every year, and having money available if we should need it on a contingency basis, but then just rolling it forward to reserves to reduce the overall cost of the project. And this is the number that I think we have a deadline on. I think the capital projects budget, we have to post it in the advertisement when we do the advertisement, but I'm not sure we submit it for any review.
We don't have to approve it until I think it usually gets done in the October.
I think so.
So we have some time on that one. But the general budget, we usually hear from the trim notice goes out giving us the actual assessed, the taxable assessed values from the property appraiser, total big amount. We learn that around January 1st, between January 1st and July 1st. That's when it comes out.
So I'm confused. The number we get back from them, what the grand total of Captiva is, usually we don't see that number until June or July. I've never seen it earlier than that.
Right, between June 1st and July.
Okay, you said January, that's right.
Oh, I'm sorry. June 1st and July, and somewhere in there they give us our number.
Right,
and
it's the tentative number.
Yes.
Right, okay. It's a tentative number. And then they give us a final number, probably in July. But even that's not final because it's going to be ultimately subject to people who make claims against it or disputes or whatever it may be. But I think we get two releases from them. One is the tentative total value of Captiva, and then the next one is, I don't know if he uses the word final, but it's the more final one. But in any event, we need to know that in order to calculate the millage rate.
Right. So by July 30th, the property appraiser certifies the taxable value and delivers it to the taxing authority, which is us. And they certify their form. So I...
No, so the first release is not a certified number. The first release, as I recall, is we get he'll put out a value in the beginning of June.
Okay.
And that's what I've seen in the past. I don't know what it says in the
right.
trim explanation.
Yes, I'm sorry, yes. June 1st, they deliver an estimate. Right.
Yeah.
And then July 1st, between that June and July period, we get it authorized by our CPA.
Right.
And he sends it back to us, and we send it back to them, and then they confirm.
Now I'm getting a little confused again. So he's going to put a value out for the grand total of Captiva by this certification date in July. That number is simply going to be part of the formula where we calculate the millage rate. So we can then have the total value of Captiva, and then we have to take our budget and divide it by that total value and by 1,000 to come up with the millage rate, right?
Yes.
Okay. So we need to have our planned budget by that date in July, whether the board is meeting in July or not, so that you can submit the form, which I think, again, goes in typically around August 4th.
Yes, 35 days after that it has to be in, and that is August 4th.
Okay. Now, the question becomes, on this page, CPD proposed general budget, I'm a little confused by the columns. One says fiscal year 2018-19, the other says the same thing. Is that a mistake? Should that be 19-20? At the top.
So the column on the top, you're looking at page 42.
Yeah.
And the column on the top, the far
did
left.
You submit a change for this?
No. Yes.
Oh, all right, let me look at the change. So. Okay, got it. I'm looking at the older one. So ignore that column.
Yeah, so the right column is the fiscal year 18-19, which is the 2019 budget. And then that's the left column. The right column is the proposed. What we did was took a 3.4% increase, which is what last year's was, on the verified gross taxable, and took that number to get us a number on what we think might be the total number taxable assessed value, and then 95% of that, because we always take 95%. That's what I'm told. Take 95%. Right. Because when people pay off the assessments early, they get a discount for that. And then we used the same millage rate that we used last.
Okay, let me slow you down again on the millage rate. Mm-hmm. We don't need, for the budget, we don't need to discuss millage rate until we're ready to submit it. In other words, you don't need to know what the total value of Captiva is until you're calculating millage. You just, your budget is independent of that.
Right.
But what you need to know is what the prior year rollback rate was, for example. Because
we just want a ballpark number so we didn't go way over.
I'm not understanding, because I don't see how they correlate. You don't have a millage on this page, do you?
It's up at the very top.
As a note.
Yes, as a note at the very top. It's the
point. Okay.
0.00.
Yeah. To me, I wouldn't even think about that at this point, because until the property appraiser has given you the value and you can calculate a millage rate, you don't need to look at it. What you do need to concentrate on is what your expenses are and what your whatever costs are in here. Yeah, the expenses. So basically, how much money are we looking to spend? And you're saying we authorized $455,000 last year, and you're looking for an authorization of $469,000.
Yes.
Are you able to give us what each of these categories are year-to-date so far?
Well, we could probably look at that on the budget, on the financials that came out.
Oh, okay. Just look at it that way.
Yeah.
Got it.
Not trying to confuse you, but do you understand what I'm saying? Is the millage rate is really irrelevant until we know what the value is from the county. Mm-hmm. What is relevant is what we're proposing as our budget to expend, and then what is the increase from year to year on the budget? And I think if there's any increase at all, we have to do a special advertisement, correct?
Mm-hmm.
We've increased the budget?
Well, I'm asking the question. In other words, in TRIM, we have to do special advertising, and the advertising has to say we have increased our budget, whatever's required under law. That's all in those TRIM explanations,
right.
Okay? What we need to do is figure out what we want and then say, okay, is it sufficient? You know, and do we take an advertisement and advise the constituents or the readers or whatever it may be that we've taken an increase in budget? If not, if we have an ad valorem, we do a different type of advertisement. So all I'm saying is that's sort of at the back end after we figured out our budget. If we're worried about getting support or issues in the community, then we might decide, well, we don't want to exceed the rollback rate. But if we're not worried about that, if what we're worried about is just accumulating extra money to be able to roll into reserves, which I'm always in favor of, that's the way to go.
But don't we need to know the taxable value to answer those questions?
No. Uh-huh. You only need, this is the amount we're going to levy. This is the tax money that we're going to levy. In other words, how much we're going to ask for. We need to know how it compares to the prior year.
No, I mean as far as if we need to advertise.
Oh, when we get to advertising, we do need to know the millage
rate. That's what I mean.
I'm simply saying it's premature to look at millage rate now because we don't know the taxable
value. Yeah, we just
need
to focus on the budget.
That's exactly right.
So you just want to look at the expenses part of it?
I'm saying just cross out that part up top. It's nice to know, but it's not relevant to anything we're going to calculate.
Mm-hmm. Why is the phone your proposal?
Because we each have a cell phone now that we keep with us 24/7.
Okay.
And that was not in there before. That was just the office phones.
Got it. Thank you.
Now there's a section in here called warranties. The meters were not covered under a warranty, we just learned. And if we want to bring that warranty in, we have to back pay $3,800. And then from there on, it's about $2,000. I don't know if that, I reached out to John and he seemed to think that that was something they had voted on before.
Can I stop you on that as well? Rather than delve into the details of that, take your worst case assumption there that we're going to have to buy the warranty under a separate meeting. We can decide whether we want to do that or not do that. But for purposes of the budget, take a very conservative approach. if in doubt, use a higher number. And when it comes down to the bottom, what is the percentage difference between the total budget for fiscal year 18-19 versus 19-20? I see a $14,000 difference. It sounds to me like we could be more conservative and bump it up by 5% over the prior year or whatever. I'm not sure what inflation rates are. But even if we bumped it up by 5%, we're going into a period of time when we're doing a nourishment. Carolyn?
I'm sorry, say that again.
Yeah. We're going into a period of time where we're doing more effort than normally we would
do, right?
And so we might have greater expectations of expenses and so on and so forth. So, you know, we might even want to be more conservative than bumping it up by 5%.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Can somebody, the transfer of operating reserves, where does that go to? It's 89,000 last year and 41 next?
That goes towards the beach
reserve.
And reduces the future assessments of the beach.
So, in fact, our expenses X that are 365 this year, and there'll be 427 next year. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Okay.
Those are true expenses.
Correct.
So in that case, we're budgeting for a $60,000 increase. So there is some.
Yeah, you're right. 18%.
Yeah, I mean, frankly, you're right.
But frankly,
there are things that we plan on a contingency basis that make it roll to the future year or whatever. It's a lot of uncertainty. But my view has always been to try to squeeze a little bit more out of the ad valorem every year to build into those reserves.
We honestly try to be as conservative as possible, so we might need your guidance a little bit. We have to bump this up a little bit more.
I'm just referencing your earlier comment, Mike, that we're only increasing our expenses by 14,000 when in fact
the budget, not the actual.
I'm saying they've taken a reasonably conservative approach, I think, already. But in this year of a lot of work, special work with the renourishment, may have to go a little further, but it's already up 18%.
Well, historically, I think we've always had, you know, a fair amount of money that's left over that we can then roll into the future, and that was sort of a deliberate effort to say,
sure,
we don't know what contingencies are going to come up. It's a small enough budget to begin with. If you had a very substantial contingency, if we had to pay for something like part of this parking lot or something else, you just want to know that you've got some money rolling forward there. Call it a cushion, call it a buffer. Yeah. What is that percentage different? I'm just curious there.
About 18.
18.
I remember seeing something on last year's that it went up 23.
No, but I'm confused. But the number that we put forth to the populace is the bottom number, right?
No.
It's 95%. What is it?
It's the subtotal of all the expenses.
Right. But you're right, it's a percentage.
No, our number that we went to tax levy last year was $400,000+. My memory is correct, Carolyn. It was not 365.
Do you hear what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think it was like $440,000+. So you have to go back and pull out the advertisements and see what we advertise. And I think what happens is that by law, we have to give a discount if somebody pays early, and we make a provision for that for 5%. So you wind up actually levying 95% of the number you need.
Right.
So if you go back and look at it, I'm pretty sure that number is $440,000+.
You mean rather than 365?
I believe that's incorrect.
Probably so.
Yeah.
So maybe we should.
Maybe because you're netting the operating reserve number out of that. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm saying the bottom one is closer to the 455 may be correct, but that's much closer to my recollection of what we advertised.
Last year, yeah, you guys approved $455,000.
Okay, thank you. You following what she's saying?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Do we want to? So, one place we could change is increase our expected operating reserve transfer. Right now, we're budgeting down $48,000.
Yeah, and I don't think we should budget it down at all.
That's the point I'm trying to get. Yeah.
So you
want to
keep that the same, or
then you're up to 510 or so if you increase it to 89,000.
I would agree with that. And so then what happens is you then look at the percent.
Keeping it the same?
budget to keep the transfer the same? Because ultimately that would just go to,
well, it's a reserve.
An emergency or ultimately to the veterinary nourishment.
That's something that happens at the end of the fiscal year.
Correct.
But you can budget for that.
You can budget for it, exactly. Now, the other point I'm trying to make is that if the percentage increase is greater than what translates into a rollback rate, and that's where the millage rate comes in. The rollback rate is
right.
Your budget is the same as the prior year. Now, again, you might have a higher millage to achieve that number, or vice versa. Maybe it's a lower millage to achieve it. There is no need for a special advertisement, but there is a need for an advertisement. But you don't have to say in the advertisement that there has been a tax increase. Again, I don't have it memorized, but that's the gist of what I remember we've done in the past.
Yes.
So what I'm saying is I'd rather go with the higher number. I'd rather take the risk that we put out an ad that says we've increased it, have extra money because we're running into special circumstances with what's coming up in the following year or whatever it may be, and take the chance that we're not going to have pitchforks and people marching in the streets opposing our budget.
Okay.
And that's what this... The reason we brought this up now as a workshop is for everybody to be able to weigh in on it and offer their thoughts. If you don't agree with my thinking is to try to accumulate more each year to roll forward into the reserves, to be prepared for contingencies, but also to have some money accumulated towards the beach project.
Keep in mind we're only at 0.3 mils and we're authorized up to 10.
Yeah, we're not going there.
No.
Don't get too excited, please. I'm kidding. No, you're right. No, yeah, we have no issue there. We have no issue there. But what? But when you, if you want to take a calculation of the, adding the 80, another 50,000 to the 469 and then calculate, assuming a 3% increase in property value, it'd be interesting to see what the millage rate looks like. But it's actually very moot at this. It'd give you a nice feel, but it's moot.
Well, that's what we were doing in the beginning. We were backing the number in because we didn't want, we can up the millage rate. So I was trying to stay within that number.
Yeah, but you're right. You can go up to 10 mils. So. And we're a long way up. We got the fire department pushing that envelope much sooner than we will.
Right? Yes.
All right. So I would ask the commissioners to take this form, look at the individual numbers. Mm-hmm. If you have questions, bring them up in the June meeting. And the idea is in the June meeting to then decide on what that bottom line number is, the approach we're going to take, and then what we give them sufficient information so that if we don't have a July meeting, they can still submit the necessary form.
Okay.
And if you don't submit the form, then you go with the rollback rate. So our downside is not great there, but if we want to get some extra money accumulated, that's the place to do it. Okay, I don't know if I made that too muddy.
Good.
But
yeah.
Now, as far as the capital goes, that's a much bigger discussion, and you know what the different needs are that are coming up from the engineers and others. Mm-hmm. So you have to put some information in there that's going to basically make sure that you're going to cover the bills that need to be covered and so on.
Gotcha.
Okay. Mm-hmm. One other area that's in the budget that I don't want to, you have $250 for interest. Joe has, is it on the agenda?
No.
Okay.
I'm Joe, still waiting on reports.
Okay. But Joe has brought up a very interesting point, which is that, and I told him to check with the treasurer, but the treasurer's not here today. I don't know, you didn't have opportunity to talk.
I checked with our CPA.
Okay.
I got information.
So basically, what's happening is most of our available cash is sitting in a virtually non-interest-bearing account. And for various reasons, to have operating capital available. We think, Joe has suggested that we could roll it into a CD that he has a bet with me that he can get better than 2.6% interest on. There's no money on the bet, but anyway. And I did some research as well, and there are some good ways and secure ways to go out there and place money. There used to be a state fund that you could, and I think that got into trouble back in 2009 or 10 or whatever, and it might have even closed. But the point is that we could be earning $50,000 plus a year in interest with the available cash that we have right now, even though that's going to start to dwindle as you pay out towards the capital budget. In other words, there's sufficient money sitting around that's in reserves and other available cash, not all reserves. Now, I think I did ask that we get a report from the accountants as to exactly how much is reserved and how much just happens to be float. And I know you were trying to get that, Carolyn. I don't know if you got it yet.
I think it's, I don't speak out of turn, but I think it's in here. There's a reserve accumulation on page 37. I don't know if that's exactly what you're talking about or not.
Yes.
Well, you know, 1 year CDs are paying right now about 2.5.
Yeah, so this is what Joe was saying, that there's, there's CDs available.
We're only getting 0.03% right now.
Yeah,
so.
I went through this about couple months ago. Uh-huh. Right now they are paying like a 2.5 something.
Well, we currently have two accounts at Florida Prime.
Yeah, but it's only for, you know, a year.
Yes.
That's it.
Yes, correct. But I'm getting two.
But I went from the... Just what you said, the 03.
Right. Well, I have two bankers now that are putting proposals together for give us different vehicles to look at, not just CDs, so we can have an intelligent decision.
Okay.
All right, I was going to say, I don't think we should need a board vote as long as we agree that we're picking a secure,
you know,
protected approach, et cetera. Yeah. Understand that FDIC does not cover for an amount greater than $250,000, although I did find an entity, and I don't know if it's worth looking at, that will spread it amongst a bunch of banks so you have accounts in all these different... So we could actually have fully FDIC protection on it. The question of the board, as we go forward to try to select the bank, the question of the board is how much money should we tie up in a one-year CD or whatever it may be, and how much do they need for cash flow?
I'm concurrently getting a proposal for a line of credit to use whatever we have in a CD as collateral.
Yeah.
So we have emergency funds that are liquid.
Great. So you have an operating line, and who is the...
I'm dealing with PNC Bank and Bank of Tampa right now.
Okay. All good ideas. Now, one other idea that we discussed that I think you brought up was that we're paying down our debt service at a faster rate than we're required to. But the borrowing of that debt service, I believe the rate there is less.
1.87.
Right. So there is no need to pay it down at any faster rate when we can earn more.
I'm trying to get our original contract to figure out what we're obligated to do. We have a balloon payment that's due today.
Right. But I think we've been adding $100,000 every year to it. And what you're saying,
$600.
Right. And so what you're saying is that we find out what the exact numbers are. We don't pay down any more than we have to. We continue to pay the debt service as required under contract with the bank, and then you keep the extra money. So then you have to just figure out what is the amount of money you need to have available. Now, your operating line that you talked about, you don't want to make that so close, you know, so maybe you keep, you know, a running $50,000 available, or the money that's coming in from, what is the rate at which money is coming in from people who've been assessed that haven't paid off their assessments? Do you know what that number is?
Not that high.
No, I think most of it's paid off.
Yeah, majority of our money is from...
I know, but what is the number? That's the question.
Of stopping payments?
Of incoming revenues that are assessments being paid off that weren't paid off.
I would say in the $3,000 to $8,000 a month range.
All right, so it's not a lot.
No.
But what do you need monthly then to cover your bills? So find out what it is. So add maybe $50,000 to that, and then invest the rest of it in a 12-month CD. And so I'm just really asking the question of the board, is that okay for him to go forward to find out a bank, make a recommendation, and we don't wait till the next meeting?
What's the amount, sorry, roughly, Joe, what do you do for the next year, just for the next 12 months?
To invest?
Yeah.
Right now it looks between 2 and 2.4, because we're about to make a $700,000 payment today.
Right. So I'd only go for it if all the principals at the FDIC, and that's very simple to do. There's lots of community bank that has
it. Pass it around.
That's what I'm requiring.
Okay, but I'm looking at this reserve document, and you just quoted a number, 2....
Well, I'm looking at excess cash that's sitting in our two capital and general accounts.
And that's 2.2, you're saying?
Yeah, even if we kept 300 grand in each account to operate off of, we would have an extra 2 to 2.4 million. It's not clearly shown on that report that you're looking at. Right?
I know, but what I'm asking is, how could you have 2 point whatever? What's the total combined cash? You said it was more than 2.2.
Our combined cash right now is 3.
3. So how do we have $3 million cash, and we have $1.8 million showing in the accumulated reserve. So
I have the same questions for our CPA.
Okay.
Yeah, that's...
Because we've had this problem before where we see a big number in the cash flow, and it seems to me that the bulk of that ought to be reserves. Unless we have outstanding bills right now that account to, you know, account for $1 million or something. So, okay, so he's working on that. I think it's very good initiative and very creative and very helpful. And if he comes to me and says, I've got this bank and it's going to be FDIC assured and this is the right number, et cetera, I just want the board to be comfortable and I'm going to authorize him to go ahead and do that.
Mm-hmm. So he'll run it by you and then...
He'll run it by me and then we'll collectively agree. Or run it by the treasurer if he's able to talk to the treasurer.
And you'll have an LLC as well? A contingent, like an LLC? Are you going to get that contingent LLC, that line?
Line of credit, yeah.
I'm telling them to include it in the package.
Great. Do you need a vote for that, Mike?
Huh?
We need to vote on that.
I don't think we need to vote on it. I just want to make sure everybody's comfortable with it.
So. I'm all for it.
Sure. We're not spending any extra money. We're simply saving money and investing wisely, right?
Investing wisely. Mm-hmm.
But the idea is it's got to be, you know, low risk.
No risk.
I think Renee has offered to put us into some IPOs in the past. I think we rejected that approach.
Yes.
Okay. moving on. Captiva Island Historical Society, Dave, you wanted to talk about that.
Yeah, I'm on the board of the Captiva Island Historical Society, and almost every year we produce a film, which is part of our what we do, and the board decided that next year we would like to produce a film about erosion on Captiva, and we've come up with a title for it. Sands of Time, History and Future of Erosion on Captiva.
That's and, really nice.
We got an approximate budget of $25,000 on the film. It depends on how many interviews we end up doing. But, you know, I mentioned to the historical board that, you know, that this could potentially be a good PR thing for the Erosion District, which I know we have talked in the past about doing a film. And they asked, or we agreed, that maybe I could come to the board here to ask you to consider being a sponsor of the film. And I was hoping to ask for $10,000 as a sponsor of the film. Now, at the briefing meeting, I think we talked a little bit. Mike, you maybe feel about maybe another source of this film? Or
well, let me jump in on it for a second. I think that it's wise for us to go ahead and donate $10,000 to the Historical Society, assuming that's within our purview to do that.
So
proceed. There's nothing that precludes it. I only raised that question because I remember one time we were making a donation to the SCCF to be on their mailing list, and I think it was Jack Cunningham opposed it, as we shouldn't be making donations. The money's raised for purposes of the district. However, I think that this serves the purpose of the district, so I think that it's an easy thing to do. In addition to that, though, we budgeted last year, because you had brought this up before the Society was in. We had budgeted, I think, $40,000 in our budget. And I think that we should try to design this in such a way that if we're going to do something that's more informative and not just historical, but passing on information that the public can see and learn about the process and so on, the two should be able to blend together but are not necessarily completely in overlap.
Yeah, I'm thinking, what I envision, we plan on, by the way, we already picked a date to have the premiere March 3rd of next year, and in my mind time flies and we'll see how this works out on our perspective, but yes, I feel that another whatever we didn't cover, whatever our needs, but I think it'll be very helpful, the historical.
It will be, and I think we should do it. In addition to that, I think there's a lot of information that, you know, the institutional knowledge of what goes on here, especially as these board members are anxious to retire. I think it's useful to think about broader elements of it and design in such a way that that might be a modular piece of it, but that there's other components that would help people understand the process.
Yeah, once it's produced, you'll see what was missed.
Who's going to produce the film for the historical?
His name is Ken Sneeden. He's done our film scores previously, and actually Hans and former Administrator Damon and I met with Ken previously, but it was just a brief meeting. No. But the intention is I'll be working with Ken and doing research and so forth. Obviously, because of the subject, Ken will be engaging the CPD, you know, because of how they're connected, erosion and CPD, Captiva.
Right.
So he'll be looking for us to meet, for interviews and
past,
present.
And I'm going to make recommendations. And he does research on his own through newspapers and so forth and raises questions. But, yes, it'll end up coming for interviews with the CPD.
Are they definitely going to do that?
Yeah, well, we're planning on definitely doing the film. We're
doing
just
the film.
Raising the money right now.
Well, there's more elements to this, but let's see if you want to make a motion on your $10,000 request.
Yes, I'd like to make a motion that the CPD becomes a sponsor of the Captiva Island Historical Society's film plan for next year, Sands of Time, History, and Future of Erosion on Captiva.
I'll second the motion. Discussion?
No. I think it's a great idea.
Should we talk to our attorney to make sure this is an appropriate use of, you know, our money that we get from the taxpayers?
I think we should.
I don't think there's anything wrong with talking to her. I don't think there's any doubt in my mind, but I think it doesn't hurt to ask her for a point of view on it. So, Carolyn, would you please?
Mm-hmm. Do you want to approve it, or do you want to take the motion, make it contingent upon approval from...
Well, we're not signing a contract with the filmmaker yet, so I think we can go ahead and go forward with the motion, and then if you find information to the contrary, we could decide to...
And what information, Mike, were you saying that you would hope that we could get from this project to use in the other project that we had already approved for $40,000? Could you be more specific?
Well, how long is this going to be, would you think?
Minutes, probably.
All right, so that's going to be designed to be entertainment. That's the primary, you know, entertain, get
and
this
history.
Share history, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
I think that if we wanted to have, whether it be economists, our attorney who's been here from the beginning, certain other people, to flesh out more about the history of erosion, maybe even have some of the engineers in the loop, whatever. I don't think you would put that in an entertainment style.
They may, yeah.
They may put some of it.
That's why I didn't mean to interrupt.
That's okay, no, that's okay.
But I really would encourage us to, once we see the film, I think you might be a little surprised what the direction will take. But
yeah, no, that's fine. But I think that if we're going to have engineers or other consultants play some role in it, one, there's going to be expenses associated with that because they need to be, they're paid for their time, in my opinion. Same thing with the attorney. But my feeling is that we might discover, once we have a better idea of the scope of what's included in this, we might find that there's elements that are not being addressed. But yet we would want to create something that people, the public, could watch and learn as much info, and also future board members and staff and so on and so forth, as a way to be oriented to what it is that we do out here in the CPD.
Well, we may find out that the film is so great, we don't need anything further.
We may.
Yeah, so.
Well, we do know that, or I feel the direction, whether it's one or two films, is really needed and is going to be extremely helpful, because the real estate changes on Captiva ownership, and when people find out about there's an assessment for the beach, the history of it is going to be, it'll help the administration.
We would have to, we're not making any further steps on a different film other than that we already approved some money for it.
Right.
So if we want to carve some of that money out to do this, that's fine. But I just feel that I've seen some of the Historical Society's films before, and I think that there's interesting history in there, but there's also entertainment. And I think that if you get into some of the mundane information, it can get pretty dry. That hasn't been their approach. So it's factual, but it also tends not to be dry. It's trying to be interesting and entertaining. And I could see that if we're going to bring economists and engineers and attorneys in, they're going to be dealing with much more dry information. But until we've seen the scope of what this is, how it's planned, et cetera, we won't know. We also had separate contact with Dylan TV and Arlene Dylan relative to being able to video meetings and being able to either broadcast them live or after the fact to just have further audio-visual kind of information available to the public who can't attend meetings. And so we thought that we could use some of that work, some of the budget to cover that work of being able to more audio-visually present what goes on here so that the public don't just read dry minutes. Now, whether that's needed, whether it's going to go online or not, we don't know. We need to go forward with that. So we started that process and had conversations with Arlene Dylan of Dylan TV, who lives on Sanibel, who's done some other interesting films down here. But we discovered very early on that we could use some help on PowerPoint. So I think that, Carolyn, you, for $500 or whatever it may be, got some guidance from her on creating PowerPoints, which we still have to present in the future. So the point is, I can see in my vision an overlap between the two, where this covers part of it, but then there's more information. And if we do it online, where they look at the film online, they could bring in different modules, depending on the level of detail that the public wants to drill down to. I'm not sure if you've seen films like that where, you know, I mean, I see your news information all the time. You've got a news report. You look at it, then they highlight something, and you can drill down and get information on another news report. I've seen films done like that where they're basically modular, and you can have a bigger picture and then drill down to detail if you're so inclined. If you're not inclined, you don't do it. And depending on who our audience, we've got a broad audience. We've got new property owners. We've got new commissioners. We've got staff. There's a changing variety of people. So I think that...
Just to try to shorten this... what is our goal? What kind of production are we going to have? What kind of educational production that we approved the $40,000 for are we looking to do, and when are we looking to do it? To inform the new residents and all, you know, that sort of thing.
We were looking to do it within this budget year. Now, it turns out that what Dave is suggesting is that we wait and see what this one looks like. I would certainly suggest that we have whoever we're going to choose start talking with the Historical Society and their filmmaker and look at the plans. I'm assuming there's going to be an outline that defines what's going to be included, who's going to be in it, how much time each one spends, et cetera. And we'll know more at that point in time. When we first approved it, we didn't know that this other one was going to be made.
I understood. But if we donate this, you know, support by $10,000, whatever, do we then get access? Are we going to have access to use any part of that film that we can in our film?
Well, this was part of the...
And I'm not sure that's appropriate. I think it's a relevant question.
No, but it was part of the conversation we had at the briefing meeting on Thursday.
I'm sorry.
That's an important
question.
To find out whether
who's got
the
rights.
Yes, exactly.
Well, I would say...
Not the rights to sell it, but certainly the rights to use it.
Yeah,
to use it. How about if I... I'm going to assume by you asking that question, and I'm going to ask the same question, you would hope to use it.
Right.
Or whatever. So how about if we can even wait next month to do this vote, whatever, but I think we need to answer that question before, either you do it pending that you have access to it, but how about if we delay it till next month and I find out.
That's fine. So let's withdraw
the Historical Society.
Let's withdraw the motion.
Yeah.
All right, withdraw the second.
I think we're inclined to try to do it, to want to do it, but we have to make sure, one, that it's appropriate.
Yeah.
And two, can we have access to the material?
That's a deal.
To
help
us on our
plan. They do a good job.
I know, but these are great questions. We want to make sure.
Oh, yeah, you want to make sure who's got the rights.
I think it's
good. And if we want to use it, is the Historical Society willing to do
it? Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds good. So I can bring it back the answers to those questions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sounds good.
Okay, administrator's report, timeline update, monday.com.
I will hurry up with all of this. I've sent everybody a login for Monday, so I won't discuss that. If you have questions logging in, you can just email or call me and I'll take care of it.
Actually, fine. Yeah.
This is monday.com. And
I can't tell you if they're hamburgers or.
yeah, I'm getting pretty hungry.
Or what do you look like cookies. They might be
the French thing.
They have a light sense of humor, yeah.
Yeah, French thing.
Well, Carolyn and I have done, we've taken the spreadsheet and we've put it into more of a project management software so we can track things better. And also associate dates and responsibilities to all the different things. Excuse the resolution on this, but it's a little bit easier when it's on your PC. But we have a status of each task that we have to do, and a start and end date. Who the vendors are that are responsible, and then of course as we grow with this we can add other columns and keep track of it. Everyone, we can start a conversation with people within our organization,
hey Mike,
as well as keep notes on every task.
Go. Okay, because you know names.
So over what's been happening 3 years ago up until now is every task associated with what we need to do for the renourishment is located here, and this takes us all the way to 2022.
Joe, I'm going to ask you to roll backwards a minute here. Remember, I you might or might not have this on there yet, but my view is that the overall project, if you will, is an elephant, and we're going to take it one bite at a time. And the first thing I want to see is what the elephant looks like, and then what the phases are. So you're right now into a planning and design phase, but what's the next level up from that? And how can I see that shows that there's like 20 phases, one of which is planning and design, another of which is construction, another of which is post.
I try to coordinate it on the left here to where the current phase is the planning and design phase. We have weekly team tasks that we keep track of, just the daily administrative things that we do. But this is the main one that we're dealing with. And then there's the construction phase, post-construction.
Okay, so roll it back again. Is what page shows the major phases, of which planning and design might be your first phase?
Those are the major phases over here. So we have trim, and then, of course, we have other projects that we do, the FEMA funding, TDC funding.
Yeah, but you keep rolling down into the detail, and I'm saying that I'm not seeing...
That's actually not the detail. That's the actual.
Those are the top.
No, but that's
projects.
Detail. It's the first level of detail is beneath the total picture. You then start to get into subservient phases, right? Of which the first one is planning.
I mean, your levels versus my levels might be much different. So I've been trying to organize this to be as simple as possible for everybody. So I've made each one of these projects a major board, which in some other project management we might have had more of a major overview like what you're thinking about and doing little things, but there were so many details underneath each one of these projects I decided just to make the main projects a board.
Like what phase runs concurrently with planning and design at any stage in the life of the project?
From what I'm reading, they threw everything into this phase.
Who's they? Sorry.
My predecessors. And so I merely took everything that we had in the Excel spreadsheet and regurgitated it onto this. So now I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying that this is what we have to deal with.
No, what we have to deal with is to figure out how to do it, to get it.
If we have all the tasks associated and also the dates.
Okay.
Because some of these dates towards the end
have they just thrown 2021? And,
yeah, because they don't know the detail yet.
They don't know. So, but it's here, and we can grow from here. That's what I was mostly worried about.
Let me roll back to the left column over there. You have the planning and design phase, the construction phase, the post-construction phase. What other phases are there?
Apportionment.
Okay, now, is apportionment overlapping with planning and design and construction? I would say yes.
I would say yes, too. But for the spreadsheet, they did not do that. They threw everything into 2022.
Okay.
So during our briefing meetings, I think, is where you and I should iron these dates out a little bit better. And TAS.
I guess what I'm trying to ascertain is whether this product, and maybe it's how you're regurgitating from the spreadsheet, but I'm trying to ascertain whether this product can show me what I'm looking for. And what I'm saying is that, you know, to me,
well,
you start a project,
let
me finish what I'm saying. You start a project and it says CEPD, let's say. That's the big universe, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you break that down into, well, what are the components of it? But for the beach for nourishment, you would basically say, oh, the components are going to be planning and design, you have construction. But then there are components that overlap throughout, like, for example, apportionment overlaps. We're in apportionment breaks down into a tentative stage.
And you're trying to see all of that in one Gantt chart. Is that what you're wanting?
I'm saying I want to see the highest level of what are the major phases that make up the renourishment project.
And my answer to you is I think I found the highest level, but apparently that might be wrong. And I'm also predicating that I'm not the author of this.
No, so I get that. I get that.
Organize
I'm not
it.
Asking why we're at where we're at. I'm trying to understand whether we're going to be at where we need to be.
Right.
Okay.
Well, how do you get help?
This is all about how we want to organize it.
Okay.
And so if you guys have an idea or a way that you want to structure it, you sort of we have to communicate. You know that. I mean, right now there's a little bit of a guesswork of what you're wanting to look for.
I think the next time we look at this as a group, we need a whiteboard, okay, or a flip chart, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I would get up there with a marker and show you some of what I think it needs to be in terms of if there's 10 major elements or 10 major phases, right, I should be able to see one of them runs over the life of the project, let's call it apportionment. Not really, but apportionment runs over certainly from the tentative apportionment stage through to the post-construction stage.
Right.
There are some elements of the project like planning and design or construction that go even further. Right? We have work to do after the project is allegedly finished. There's still construction work vis-a-vis whatever you call it, tilling of the beach and things like that.
Okay.
So I vision it like this, right? You have a beginning and an end, and it's usually an 8-year period. Joe?
Yes,
yeah,
sir.
Look at me and forget that for the moment, right? There's
no,
a beginning and an end over an 8-year period, right? The beginning could be right after the last project, and even there, there's overlap between the projects, between the beginning and the end of each project. But I'm envisioning that in a beginning and an end, you've got a timeline, and the timeline spans 8 years. And then under that, there are elements. The planning and design might be the first, you know, 2 years of the 8 years, right? So this bar going horizontal that shows the planning and design stage. Then construction comes somewhere in the middle of, you know, not in the middle, but in the midst of planning and design, and it goes out for a certain period. And then apportionment runs from this period. And I'd like to be able to see against the calendar of where we're going, what that looks like.
Then I would just have to create a new board called Overview that gives you that 8-year look. And then within that, as I referenced the other projects, these would be the minor projects. I raised all this up a level because I didn't know how much detail I had to reserve under each project. So that's why it's on this level. But under weekly team tasks, I can easily have overview. And then I can create a Gantt chart.
But hold on, see, that doesn't make sense to me. Why would the overview, you mean a task that you would do is to create the overview would be a weekly team task?
No, I don't associate those two. I would just put another level in here called overview. And then that would give you your 8-year whatever
purview. Maybe you could show them like if you're able to do it.
Yeah. Because for us, I'm building this to where we can track each test that is coming up and put dates next to each one, because the software notifies us of what's coming up, and we can have good organization with that. Now I can create another board that gives you guys that.
Okay, that we'll talk about that separately. Open up planning and design for a second. Now, see what happens to me as I look at that is you're right down to the bottom line of the products that are the deliverables that are coming out of planning and design, right?
Yes.
There's a 15-year permit, there's a biological thing. Isn't there some subdivision of planning and design? Well, first of all, just planning and design, you know, they sound like two separate components to me. But isn't there a subdivision under that you could say, well, planning translates into in here, and under planning, obtaining permit, or whatever it may be, but some level that doesn't drill down to the lowest level of the deliverable?
I personally wouldn't have written it this way.
I get that.
Yeah, so okay. It can be separated.
Okay, so I get that. And so what I'm saying is, as you look at it, as you drill down into the detail, do you see a subdivision under planning and design, besides just planning and design, that... Because that's the way I like to look at it, as at a macro level, and then eventually drill down within the macro level into micro level detail. Because as soon as I start seeing all the micro level detail, I fog over and I can't see the big picture.
Well, I sort of had to go design this backwards, because this is the lowest level that I can have a task.
Yeah.
And then I work my way out. So that's why I could just work up another higher level for you and have things that way. And then if we need to divide planning and design, half or three quarters of planning is already done, because that started 3 years ago. So
Wrong with that.
Right.
We could just...
Well, like our active area...
Well, go to construction then. That's an example, which didn't start 3 years ago.
Well, I don't like how this construction, it's very simple. It's only several things.
Okay.
Mobilization and all of that.
Let me come back to what I'm looking to get out of the planning process is that we identify things that need to be done by not just by us but by outside parties or whatever it may be, that we're identifying them in the planning process. And on a weekly basis, when we produce a status report, we're saying, are we on plan or are we off plan? All right, what's been accomplished? What are we going to do the following week should spill out of the planning document? Mm-hmm. Now, I know that's not totally true, because I know there's many things that come up that you can't anticipate. So those are, you know, unanticipated things. But I'd like to be able to see that somehow when I'm looking at a status report, it's telling me where we are relative to where we're supposed to be. Have you ever worked with project plans before?
No.
No? Okay. Dave, have you?
I just picked up a phone.
A legal pad, a yellow...
Let's assume you're building a building, just because it's an easier analogy, right? You're going to build a building, right? So there's going to be a stage where you're going to find out what's permissible in the area. So that maybe is the feasibility stage, right? Then you're going to have a stage where you talk to the clients to find out... You just went through a project. Didn't you have a project plan for your house that you built?
I didn't have a spreadsheet. I didn't have Joe.
I'm not
a contractor, and you know.
I'm not trying to be critical. I'm just trying to understand. So to me, it's like we're going to build this house for Mike. It's a guest house. First thing we're going to find out is what, you know, feasibility. What's feasible? What can you build? What size? Does it have to be set back from the road? Whatever it may be. But you go through a feasibility stage. Then you're going to get into the requirements stage, which is you're going to ask him, how many rooms do you want? You know, how much square footage do you want on there? Whatever it may be, but you're going to get better information on requirements. And then out of that, based on what is required, you create the how. You're going to have to create a construction phase, which says, all right, first we need to prepare the land. We need permits might be somewhere there in feasibility. They might be in construction. But as you break it down into individual elements of what goes involved in creating a house, you get through they do the framing, and they do, you
know. That's what Joe did.
I honestly don't know what you're asking for, Mike, because that's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I have 65 points of what we're going to be doing over the next 18 months.
I know, but what I'm saying is they're going
so
down.
You're asking for more detail than
I'm
that?
I'm asking them to be collected at a level where I can just see what the major phases
are.
Do
you want like an executive level?
Yeah. That's all I'm envisioning it, and I'll create it.
You're going to love it.
You'll have it by next board meeting.
Well, I'm not even saying
how many
projects
you give me.
So, for example, out of this plan that you have right now, what things are due next week?
Well, I'm...
There's nothing in there right now that's due next week.
Yeah, nothing due, but
the
yellow is what's coming up next. And then we are now sitting down going through each one to make sure that that is, in fact, what we need to be doing.
What you could do, though, is if you hit the My Week and pull up your name or my name, up. Yeah, there you go. Pull up your name or mine. See, there you go. It shows you what five things you have to do this week.
Yeah. Look,
and what's
simple,
coming up the next week.
And then as the major things come up,
you're scrolling faster than I can read. Can you go back to the top of your My Week again?
Well, the things on the planning and design have not popped up even this week yet. But
right,
as they do pop up, they will come up on my weekly task list.
Right.
If I'm assigned to it, if Carolyn's assigned to it, it'll be on the.
So when I look at like detailed subsection, right? You might have something that relates to parking or something that relates to maintenance of vehicles or whatever it may be that I don't even want to look at. It's like I could care less about those, but I might be very interested in. I don't know what developed content document is, but I might be very interested in that. Or
you're not interested in it.
Fine. But my point is that by giving me a grouping at a little bit higher level, I can look at it and say, well, no, I don't want to scroll down to the lowest level of detail. I want to look at one group and ignore something else. Like, I don't want to know about monitoring the beach. At this point, another time I might want to say, well, I'd like to know more about what do we do in monitoring the beach. So by being able to collect them into categories, you know, it allows me to decide which ones I want to drill down into.
I totally agree. I put this together specifically for us to administrate things correctly. And I knew there were so many details, I wanted to make sure I'm on top of it. And this is going to email notify us and show us on a weekly and monthly basis what's coming up. So that was my priority. Now I know I can build a level that will be just good for you guys. And then I can export that into an Excel spreadsheet, and then you can have it, so make it nice and clear.
So let me use another example, apportionment, right? I know that apportionment usually means we engage up front, we engage an economist, or we request proposals of economists, we engage an economist, and they come up with a recreational survey that they do. They later come up with a tentative apportionment plan, and then there are steps that we work through to get the tentative apportionment plan to acceptance. Overlapping with that, we might have that we have to run a referendum, so what are the steps involved in it? So I want to be able to see these different collections, if you will, but then I may not want to, when I'm looking at referendum, I don't want to see the detail of all that's involved in apportionment, but I do want to see what are the steps below referendum.
I would like to know what your major groupings are, though.
Well, we have to figure that out. No, we have to figure that out.
That's a whiteboard thing.
That's a whiteboard thing, exactly.
I think this can all be done on a whiteboard.
But what I'm saying then is if we see it that way, when I look at the plan, I can start by seeing the major categories and say, well, no, I don't want to know about parking, and I don't want to know about this. So just push them out of the way. But here's one on apportionment. Now let's break that down.
No, you have a very relatively simple request. We just got to talk it out and whiteboard it.
Yeah.
Got it.
But then I want to know that the product that you're using, if I were to look at the first page of it, right, I could see all of these major groupings, or maybe it's two pages, but see the major groupings, and I can see when they're starting and ending. And then if I want to focus on a particular one, I say, okay, let's expand that, and that takes it down to the next level of groupings, right, underneath that, under construction or under design or whatever. And then you do that, I don't know how many layers we go down to, maybe five or something like that.
Yeah,
I don't know.
And that's the hard part. I, for this software, I did the lowest layer and worked my way back up. So we just got to build higher levels for you.
You know, and if you've taken English class, classes or compositions or whatever it may be, they ask you to write a theme. And they usually tell you, write down as many facts as you can first to understand the gist of what it is you're going to be communicating. And then you start to collect it into an outline. Or even a table of contents is a way of looking at it. And that's kind of what I'm saying, is I want, my mind logically thinks that way in terms of a table of contents. I pick the chapter that I want to understand more. I open up that chapter. There's a bunch of different subsections of the chapter.
I totally understand.
Yeah. Okay, good. So we're on the same wavelength.
Overview of
okay.
what's happening.
Yeah.
So I needed a task management software because there's just a lot of moving parts
that's fine.
On our level.
No, that's fine.
Maybe yeah. it's something else that you need with Mike, or will this work?
No, Mike wants Microsoft Project, which can really detail everything out.
We'll clarify that I haven't said I want Microsoft Project. You're saying that that meets the needs of what
yes.
I'm describing,
yes,
right? Because I don't know how Microsoft Project works.
But
Mike, do you have a project that you've do you have a program that you've used that you want us to look at?
I think we did actually use Microsoft Project in the CEPD some years ago.
Yeah, I saw an old document that
right.
showed that.
And I'd have to see what it looks like. I don't know if they still have the project plan around. But I think he's hearing what I'm asking for. Now it's just a question of, I don't know whether this does it or not. That's up to you to decide.
Yeah. Well, we're talking about serving two purposes. So.
No, we're not.
We're one purpose of showing you exactly what's going on with the overview, another purpose of us doing the day in and day out of the administration.
And I'm saying the two should be the same, because if you have the plan
in
that shows
world,
that
yes.
you drill down to the lowest level
yeah,
of the
well
plan,
that,
and that tells
would be
you
Microsoft
the
Project,
okay.
and we can buy that software and have it all under one, but I think we can satisfy everyone's need with this.
Okay.
And another thing, Microsoft Project is not going to notify us of upcoming dates.
I don't know what
and
does.
It's not going to...
Joe, I don't have a bias towards one or the other. Okay, and if you think Microsoft Project will do it, how much is that going to cost and we can get it? If you don't think it's going to do it, will this do what I'm looking for? I just want to be able to see a plan that I can basically say, you know, we're on target or we're not on target.
I know.
And right pick, now, and pick elements of it at it.
And right now I do not know of a software that would satisfy both our needs.
You know, the same thing exists in these spreadsheets, right? Basically, if you look at a spreadsheet or a budget or whatever it may be, we're categorizing things.
Yes.
And then there's detail behind it, and there's probably a checking account or a subledger in the office that takes it even further. What do they call it? I forget what product they use. But anyway, but you get it. But it takes it down, but you got to start at a big picture. A budget is one page. That represents a mountain of work and so on and so forth, because you can then break down each of those things. Let's not beat this to death now.
I think we've done that already.
Well, we've been beating it to death, and I don't feel like we're necessarily where we need to be yet. So.
I hear, but maybe we should.
Well, we've switched two different products now so far since we started this process, or three. I think Damon had one set. Carolyn started to get it in another form. And all I'm saying is I'm trying to finally decide on one and say, let's get it right. And put the data down and then live with that as a living document going forward. Nextcloud is basically your version of AWS, right? It's
yes.
putting the data up in the cloud.
And then we made a commissioner section where as documents are needed for your view, we put it all underneath this section. And then internally, we have... I apologize. I'm logged in as a commissioner right now. So this is what you're going to see. But for us, we have a more extensive folder system than where we're backing up all the documents. We currently have had 5,500 documents beyond our website as storage, and now we're moving them all over to this. And then this system will be backed up in two separate places. And then our main system is working off of a data center in California. So we wanted something completely off Florida so we can stay up in case of an emergency. Mm-hmm.
Let's schedule the tutorial, either in a briefing meeting or in another meeting where you walk us down so that everybody knows how to use it.
No, I agree. Right?
I mean, we need a tutorial. I agree with that. I just think we've run out of time today. And let me just say that I think you have a wealth of knowledge and information here. You know how to do a lot of things. I have a perspective on how I want to be able to see it, and we need to bring those two together.
Yes.
And you can implement what I'm looking for, and that has to be, well, we can reconcile it between us so that we're doing it, that we're both satisfied with it. And so this is not a criticism. This is you trying to salvage from existing information, and maybe sometimes you want to use that as a source of information but not a constraint on how you represent stuff. Mm-hmm. Audit submission. Did we submit the audit?
It has been sent online to the person who needs it, and we will be submitting it through their computer program by the end of this week.
It's due in June, right?
It's due June 30th.
Okay, so we're ahead of schedule.
Yes.
On that one.
Yes.
Now, by the way, somewhere under whatever category you would have, this would be one of your items in there.
It is.
That needs to get done every, no, I know it is, but I'm just saying, but there's an example of showing how to break it down and make sure that the task falls out and gets done.
Next one,
RFP for bookkeeping. Yeah.
We did send out to four local CPAs asking them, sharing with them exactly what it is that Sturmer has contractually to do for us, and asking them if they are interested in bidding. I've asked them to get back with us by the end of, I think I gave
the
them month. A month. Yeah. And so far, did we get back to that already?
Yes.
Yeah. So.
And how's it looking?
In process.
You think you're going to get? You think you're going to get some? What?
I hope so.
You
yes.
said you have one back already.
Yeah, we have one back already asking some questions.
Oh, asking questions. Okay.
Yeah.
Is this something that we could advertise for a bookkeeper who wants to do some part-time work? When we had Joanne Paul, that's basically what she did.
You need more than a bookkeeper?
Well, then advertise for an accountant. Whatever it is you need, I'm just saying, can we advertise for it rather than necessarily expecting a company to do it? I'm just curious as to whether that's...
I suppose we could.
I mean, we had a one-man band, if you pardon the expression, one-woman band in Joanne Paul years ago, who had been a CPA elsewhere, not here in Florida. And she did all of these books. She went over all of the spreadsheets of The Economist and so on. I don't know how much time she spent on it back in the day. And when we lost her, it moved to Stromer. And it just seems like the quality of the output we're getting since then has gone to, has deteriorated, right? So I would consider doing that, trying to see, especially on Sanibel. You know, there's people who are retired that did that pretty. John was an accountant previously. Go ahead, Mike.
I would think the same thing, but I've come to learn that you can't hire anybody out here.
I know.
Even for part-time work, for full-time work. I bought this tooth and nail. Nobody wants to work out here. Everybody's got either the dough, they don't want to come out here. And
Well, our history has shown otherwise. I mean, John had whatever background he had, is out here for many years.
Mm-hmm.
That woman that went to the SCCF that you once mentioned, she's living.
They are, as we would suggest,
a different
that it's
role.
Difficult to get people out here.
Well, I agree with that, but I'm saying if there are people already out here, you just have to find a way to reach them. So
I just never saw a good rate between
one
for keeping and one for CPA.
We are.
Yeah. It's just $100 difference in my opinion.
There's a woman who lives on Sanibel that works for the yacht club, who is basically their accountant or bookkeeper or whatever. I'd hire her in a minute, Lauren, if she were available for it. She doesn't want to do it. Anyway, it's possible.
But I would think by going to a firm, isn't that more reliable in terms of, if the bookkeeper gets...
Well, I contacted four Sanibel firms.
Yeah.
So then we'll see what we get.
Yeah, okay. That's good. Thank you.
I mean, that was the theory with Hans, right? And yet we've still suffered all this discontinuity, and it's taken us a long time, and he's had to advertise. I don't see what the difference is, but...
Well, I think it was better than not having it.
Okay. You can't prove the contrapositive, but RFP for bookkeeping. Commissioner comments. Anything you want to say, Dave?
No, I think
I just question the rope and the signs. Is that all done?
The rope is all done, yes.
Okay, it's done a little up. I'm never up here.
Yeah.
We're adding more signs on the beach this Wednesday.
Crab traps, are they still out there?
They're gone.
Okay.
We finished the signs in the lot and added signs because some signs were stolen right before I showed up. And then, so that's all done now. We have 10 signs that we're going to put along the entire beach for the dunes.
Because this is a random thing. Down by us, some property owner put up his own signs to stay off.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'll send you a photo.
Stay off the dunes?
Yeah.
Is it green?
it's not even in the right place. I think that they need to be asked to move their signs back. But they put Rope and Ballard out into what looks like past the erosion control line, and with signage for the public to keep off.
It looks really official, but it's all the way, you know, way past here.
One thing we might need to consider is extending our ropes. Something we might talk about is extending the ropes around the dunes, since the dunes are growing. Some of the rope
they're buried. They're getting buried. Yeah. Anyway, any other general comments?
Yes, I've asked before, and I would like someone. Can someone go back to the last project and find out, was there a template for the grasses and all the plantings that were done? I know you can't start, you know, from the water and come in because the water changes, because the tide, you know, because the sand, you lose some sand. But, you know, there's a point where not all seagrasses are good. When it starts going all the way to the water and you've lost all your beach, you lost too much. So we planted a bunch of seeds for these seagrasses with the idea of maintaining them. It's a very, very positive thing. But they're encroaching on the water. Now, of course, the water's encroaching as we lose sand. But these things are like marching. Right. So I'd like, you know, did we have a plan to monitor how far away from, I don't know, the shoreline, how far, you know, you can't monitor from the shore in. Did we monitor from, you know, some of these lines?
They're really moving forward.
Oh, my gosh, yeah, absolutely.
Really? I'd have to see the spot you're talking about.
I'll walk you, yeah, absolutely.
But that's part of the whole idea of it, is to let it march. Because it holds sand.
And do we really win when we have grass all the way to the water and not go to the beach anymore?
I have to see the spot you're referring to.
Yeah, right. No, I hear you. But
I mean, look in front of my cottage, my beach cottage. Mm. I mean, it doesn't go out that far, but it does encroach beyond the line that put in.
Yeah, same. You know,
and it does go to the water to wash out. It'll just disappear.
Storm.
You'll see. I'll show you my what I'm talking. I'll take photos of that as well.
I think Michelle Pfeiffer will have a plan, because there was a seed or a planting plan.
That's different, though. That's where they're going to put them in initially. It doesn't do what he's saying.
What he just asked for?
No. I wanted to see that plan. Right. And then was there any foresight to saying, you know what, if this is super successful and it goes all the way to the water and no one can go on the sand anymore, then we've really been successful. I don't think that's a success.
I don't think so either.
Oh, that's... I'd like to see that, because I...
Yeah, no, for sure.
It's not the beach eroding there. It's the seagrass are
exactly.
going closer to the...
Right.
Wow.
Well,
that's an
unprofessional eye. That's me looking at that.
You know your property better than anybody.
Right, so in the south side?
Yeah.
What's the consequence of that? You can't put a blanket down because there's no sand in that area or something? I'm serious.
Well,
I'm just
no, you can't. You can't use the sand. You can't use the beach. It's encroached, and it's not just like a uniform thing. You've got some areas where it's really, I don't know, 100 feet wide that's come to 50 feet from the water right now. Some areas it's, you have 150 feet of beach. Uh-huh.
And you're on the south side?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
One thing I used to do, by the way, and the CPD did it as an organization, is get volunteers to go out, usually once or twice a year, and clean up this crow's feet and this spurs, which make it very hard to use the beach. There's these little burrs, whatever you call them, that there's a type
sand
of
sand spurs.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know what they're called, but there's crow's feet and there's wild grasses that don't belong out there that are actually invasive and also hurtful.
Australian pines too.
Australian pines, another example. And we used to have a situation where those were periodically. I think Allison did. I'm not sure Kathy did it, but Allison used to recruit people from FGCU and elsewhere, and once a year they'd get a bunch of volunteers out there to clean up some of that stuff. So, but I think that's a good idea. I mean, that's part of what the beach monitor should be looking at, that kind of stuff. So the next time the beach monitor takes a run down to the south side, he'll send a picture of what to look for, and you'll have a better feel for it.
Okay, that'd be great.
But I think if it's sea oats, if it's the approved grasses, you can't remove it if it's seaward of the erosion control line. I'm just saying.
I hear you. That what you say doesn't surprise me, but it concerns me that we planted this stuff without a plan in place. So,
well, there was a plan, and the plan was to let the dunes grow high and forward towards the sea. Now, maybe you're saying it's gone beyond what the thought was in the plan.
Right.
Okay.
And very successful.
David, comments?
No more beach. I'm all set. Thank
okay,
you.
Great. Thanks. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, guys.
Mike.
I wanted to thank you guys, too, for being in contact with Carolyn about getting stuff, the, you know, surveys.